Please stand by. We are going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the February 27, 2024 Planning Board meeting. Thanks for being here in attendance. Very first off, I want to welcome our three new board members, Elizabeth Latone, Scott Needleman on the end, and Matthew Goltenoff, second to the end, and congratulate all of you and welcome you to the board. The first thing we need to do is approve the minutes from our last meeting, so if I could get a motion to do that.
Motion to approve.
Okay, can I get a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Mr. City Attorney? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we'll do city attorney updates and swearing in, and then we'll do board election.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to the members of the board. Today's meeting of the Planning Board will be conducted in a hybrid format with members of the board physically present in the temporary commission chambers at the Miami Beach Convention Center, and applicant staff and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. To participate remotely in today's meeting, the public may dial 1-877-853-5257 and enter the webinar ID, which is 861-4342-6327#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 861-4342-6327. Anyone wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon in the Zoom app or dial *9 if you're participating by phone. This time I'd like to swear in any members of the public and staff who will be providing testimony in today's meeting. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. And lastly, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, so last month we did an election of the chair and co-chair, and Ms. Durham correctly pointed out that that is supposed to be done in the February meeting, so we have to do that again today.
So. Yes. Yeah, that's part of the bylaw. So if anybody wants to make a motion to nominate a chairperson and a vice chair.
Motion to nominate Brian Elias as chair.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Cement. Second by Ms. Beattie. We can do that by acclamation, or if we want to do a roll call, is there any preference?
You can do it by acclamation.
Is everybody okay?
Yep.
All in favor?
Acclamation. All right, and then do we have a motion for vice chair?
Motion to nominate Melissa Beattie as vice chair.
All right.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Cement, second by Mr. Frieden. By acclamation?
Okay. Sounds good.
Motion passes.
Thank you all for your confidence. Okay, moving on to the actual agenda, we are going to start with requests for continuances. Planning Board file PB230634. Height limits for main use parking garages on Terminal Island.
This still need a little more time to review recommendations and the traffic impacts of this. So we spoke to the applicant and we requested that the item be continued one more month, and they were okay with it. So if we can get a motion to continue the item,
motion to continue item two to the March meeting.
Can we get a second?
I'll second it.
Okay.
Okay, and I don't think we need a roll call by
acclamation. Anyone opposed to the continuance? Okay, it's continued. Riley, I usually like to do discussion items at the end so the people that are here for an item don't have to wait, but I think we are having a presentation. Are they here?
There's supposed to be a presentation by Ms. Amy Litos. I don't see her here, so maybe we can table the item until she arrives.
So let's table those, and we'll go on to progress reports. Item number five, Planning Board File 060075, the Good Time Hotel.
Okay. So this item came before the Planning Board last month. We discussed some violations that took place in the month of December, and also the Planning Board at that time decided to schedule a revocation modification hearing. That revocation modification hearing has been noticed for the March meeting. So at the March meeting, the Board will actually be able to discuss the order and make recommendations to modify the order if necessary. That can run the gamut from modifying their hours, their sound limits, whatever the case may be. So this month is just still a progress report. So it's to discuss if there's any updates, if any changes have been made. So to my knowledge, there have been no additional violations since last month. However, we have received emails from members of the public with concerns that they are hearing the sound during the hours in which they're allowed to play. So with that.
And Rogelio, before they speak, so I saw an email that apparently all the violations that were before magistrate were dismissed.
I believe that, that's the case.
Does anyone know, what happened there?
I don't know the history. I'm not sure if anybody from code enforcement is here.
Okay.
I was planning on having them here for the revocation modification.
For next month.
Yeah.
Okay, so today's more of a discussion.
More of a discussion.
Okay. Someone here from the Good Time? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, congratulations again on both being reelected. Mickey Marrera here, and welcome to the new. Cavardell, Fernandez, Larkin, and Tappanis here on behalf of the Good Time Hotel. Basically, from as far as the progress report, everything Rogelio said is correct. There's been no, since we were here last, and certainly since back in the beginning of December, there have been no violations. I checked as of this morning, there have been no complaints this year at all since last time and going back to December. The violations that were issued were dismissed at the special magistrate hearing.
Can you explain what happened there in the hearing?
I mean, I'm the attorney, so it was clear to the special magistrate that there was inconsistencies as to the standard. The code officers acknowledged that. That was a big part of it. It was pretty lengthy hearing. I don't really want to go through it all here.
I'm curious what the finding was.
The finding,
it was based on the standard that's in the CUP.
I think there was at least, an understanding that there was confusion and it was from top to bottom. And that I think they took into account, and I don't want to put words into the special magistrate.
Because
a lot was said over the course of 45 minutes and a decision was made. But I can tell you that the actions taken by the hotel over the years were discussed. The whole history was discussed, and the totality of the circumstances, she made that ruling.
All right, so I have a question for you. So, we've been dealing with the Good Time for a long time, and everyone's giving you kudos to try, and Avi comes and speaks and talks about what he's trying to do, but we got an avalanche of emails this time from residents, which we've never had. Usually we get one or two. Maybe it was orchestrated, I don't know, but any idea what precipitated that?
I don't. There have been no complaints or violations. I check getting prepared for this hearing, and I know that if there were violations and certainly complaints, but that there'd be something to talk about here.
Right.
So I was concerned. And, obviously the operation, it's tight. While I understand the neighbors have a lot of concerns, my client is, their operation is suffering too because they're on eggshells. They're trying to make sure they keep the volume low while still maintaining an atmosphere that generates profit. It's not always generating a profit. The business part of it is not doing as well as they would like. So we're trying to find that balance too. But I mean, what I can tell you is typically what brings us here is that violations have been issued. At the very least, a series of complaints. We haven't had that. So going into this, I understand folks have emailed you, but there's been nothing on the record for us.
I'm sure some of them are going to speak. So why don't you go ahead and take a seat. Let's hear from whoever's here to speak, and then maybe you can come back up. Whoever's here for this item. Well, let me ask real quick. Is there anyone on Zoom?
Two hands are raised on Zoom.
All right. Since you're here in person, we'll let you go first. And if you don't mind, just introduce yourself and your address.
Sure. So my name is Charles Fisher. I live at 635 Euclid Avenue. I have emailed y'all. Maybe if I can get an extra minute or so to finish saying what I want to say. And also, I have some answers to the questions you just asked, if you want, at the end
sure.
as well. So I know the Good Time Hotel has come before this planning board multiple times, I think almost 10, about the noise violations. I know some of the older members are probably getting tired of hearing about it, and the newer members will be tired of hearing about it. Imagine instead of 10 times over the last few years, they're coming to your house every single weekend. They're coming into your balcony, over your terrace, through your backyard, and into your bedroom window every weekend. So if you're getting tired of hearing from them, we're getting tired of hearing from them. We have worked in good faith with this board. We've worked in good faith with the code compliance, and we've worked in good faith for years with the Good Time Hotel. And we're still at a point where it feels like we're just now going through the ringer and not getting anything accomplished. We're still hearing loud noises every weekend. The problems with calling code compliance, the reason why there might not be violations over the last month, though there were some both in November and December, not just November, is because calling code compliance, it takes time out of your Saturday. You've got to wait a half an hour for them to come. Sometimes when they come, they're not. The noise has come down a little bit, and they leave, and the noise goes up. The Good Time Hotel positions people on our corner, so to call the hotel to turn down the music when the when they see code compliance show up. I see the guy sitting there on the lawn chair in my corner. So they act like it's a little bit in good faith, but what's happening is they're doing this big song and dance, and for 3 years, us in the neighborhood are having to deal with it, and we're tired of it. So the Good Time Hotel was given a conditional use permit under the assumption they would not be bothering the neighborhood. They are bothering us significantly. The thing that I think caused the avalanche of emails is the most recent magistrate hearing. Just one more minute, please. Where the six violations that had been given in November and December were thrown out. So the neighbors in the neighborhood who call code compliance spend their Saturday working with them to get these violations, to then bring these violations before the CUP to get the revocation to happen, are now looking at starting all over again, and it's exhausting and it's infuriating. So I think that is what really triggered a lot of people to be so angry at this process, is because we're doing all the things that we are asked to do, and then we go before the magistrate, and some law firm shows up and is able to get stuff thrown out. And we are not paid to do this. I'm not paid to be here. I'm taking time off of work. This is not my job, but here I am.
And Charles, if you could just what days is it that you're hearing and
I mean, honestly, anytime they have music, we hear it. I don't care to kind of hear like wafts of a little bit of music. You know, I live in South Beach. I'm not a crazy person.
Right. But what days is it really
disruptive? The really loud music currently is on Saturdays. Sometimes it's on Sundays too, but most of the time on Saturdays. It used to be Friday, Saturday, Sundays. Their CUP gives them 7 days a week, I don't know, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. or something like that. So their CUP technically allows them to do it all the time.
No, I get that, but I'm trying to understand when is it disruptive? Saturday in the afternoon, at night?
Saturday in the afternoon into the evening into sunset. So if you want to use your backyard or your terrace on a Saturday, you want to have a barbecue, you can't. Or you can, but you're listening to the Good Time Hotel's banging music. And so we've lost the ability to use our outdoor spaces on Saturdays. And it's not some Saturdays, it's all of the Saturdays. It's not just during Miami Music Week or just during Art Basel. It's during February 3rd, or, you know, it's every Saturday. So it'd be one. This
and it
is
starts at what, in like 10 a.m., 11 a.m.?
Oh, the music probably starts around noon, I guess, and it gets louder and louder and louder as the bigger name DJs.
Do you know how late it goes? Because the only reason I'm asking is, you know, listen, as you know, it's a very tough balance for us. We want you to have peace of life, quality of life, and we want them to succeed. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal here. So the reason I'm asking you is the CUP has hours, it has days. So I'm just trying to get an understanding with specificity. What is the touch? So you're saying Saturday around noon.
Saturday around noon it starts. And, excuse me. That's this. Not to bump into the furniture.
It's okay.
Bumping into the furniture.
Does it go late night or?
No, it goes till like 6:30 or 7. It goes till after sunset. So whenever sunset is happening, it's going past sunset.
Okay.
And my assumption is they'll just keep the party going later as sunset and goes later. It used to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, I've gone to the Good Time Hotel. I've asked them that maybe they could reduce the CUP to 2 calendar days a month or something like that. Throw a party, go off, I'll buy tickets. I love to party. But it can't be we lose our outdoor space every Saturday. Like that's we no longer have use of our outdoor space on Saturdays. That's our I paid a lot of money for our apartment with the terrace to use it on Saturdays and put a grill up there, and now I'm at the Good Time Hotel all the time. Right. And that's not just me, that's all of my neighbors.
Got it.
So just in conclusion, no other hotel in South Beach is allowed to push their parties across the Flamingo Park neighborhood. So we're asking that you guys, the planning board, take action at the next revocation meeting and remove the outdoor entertainment component of their CUP to end this nuisance to us once and for all. So thank you for that.
Stay there 1 sec. Does anyone have questions of him before we go to the next speaker? Okay. Thank you, Charles.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you guys
in.
Very much. Thank you.
Anybody else in chambers to speak on this from the public? No? Okay, we'll go to Zoom.
The first person is Johan Moore.
Johan, were you sworn in?
Yes, I considered myself sworn in when
and
Nick
Mr. Chairman, at this point, this is just before you as a progress report, but at the modification revocation hearing in March, I will swear in witnesses.
Okay, great. Okay, go ahead, Johan. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to the new members and members old and returning as well. I want to speak both as a resident on my own behalf. I will also venture to say that if the next virtual speaker is not Chris Reynaga, that I am forwarding her ongoing years of concerns and complaints. And that leads me to my first point. And I should also add that I'm speaking on behalf of Meridian Court Community, a grouping of about 50 people that lives, who live, and that acts within Flamingo Park neighborhood and in support of our neighborhood association. And I will briefly mention that FPNA's position is, in fact, in favor of retightening or, if you will, harmonizing the noise standard, because I believe that is the core of the special master's dismissal and of the occasional confusion by code compliance as to which aspect of the currently contradictory code applies after planning board thought fit to weaken it a year ago. But my point in mentioning Chris Reynaga is, in fact, that there is not just a time spread, if you will, namely every Saturday, but a geographic spread. These are two buildings that are on two separate avenues and at separate streets. There is community outrage over the dismissal, and there was no concerted effort, certainly that I knew of, to flood any board members with emails. But as Charles Fisher just pointed out, the annoyance to the neighborhood is ongoing, and we suspect that so long as we can keep it up, we will keep coming before you to ask you for intervention. I want to make one final point, please, which is that Mickey, Mr. Marrero, just admitted, as has Good Time repeatedly, that it is their profit motive that is the cause of this noise. And I submit to you that it is an illegal taking of our residents' property rights.
Mr. Moore, your
of their
2 minutes are up.
Quiet enjoyment of their property. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Mark Antoine.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Antoine Damido. I'm the president of the HOA at Villas of South Beach, 635 Euclid Avenue. Charles Fisher is a neighbor, and I approve entirely what he said. That was very, very good briefing and of what happened. Just to add a little bit to this, I hear a lot of complaints from all the neighbors in the building. I pass it on to the Good Time. Every time we have a meeting, I've always been there for the past 2 years, sitting down at a table or on Zoom to discuss with Avi and the team. Now Avi is gone, but we have someone else in place. And I've said so many times that we have complaints every Saturday. Consistency is terrible. consistency is every single Saturday. Again, we would be more than happy to see large holidays, big parties, and make South Beach a great place to be and make great money with good parties. Yet, consistency every single weekend is terrible. It is not livable. You have to hear this because it's very important to the community to be able to enjoy our outdoor space with our own atmosphere that we've chosen to live in a residential area with the ambience of South Beach. It has to stay ambient. It cannot be intruding our own spaces every single weekend. I've sat down with them to discuss possibilities. The first one is to stay silent. That would be the best, but that's not the route they're choosing. They're choosing to do every single weekend, and they want to do also the major holidays as well, which we will oppose completely. It's either or. You can't have everything. And it feels that this CUP is like a gun given to a newborn. They're shooting right and left, and there is no possibility for us to do anything about it. We sit down, we talk, and that's all we can do. We're not paid for this, and we are living the problem.
Mr. Antoine, your turn.
If you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer. There is one thing that, I'm sorry, but there's one thing that has been discussed, was to elevate the wall that they've done. The preservation board is not allowing this. They opened without a wall. They built a wall. Maybe now it's time to put a lid on this so that it could be contained and they can do the party they want during the daytime without intruding the neighbors' atmosphere and homes.
All right. Thank you, sir. Anybody else on Zoom?
Jean's iPhone.
And please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
The hand came down.
So yeah, it may be redundant of all everyone else's comments. If it's the same comments, then.
Oh, looks like she unmuted.
Jean,
can
are you
hear
there?
Me?
Yes.
Yes, can you state your name for the record?
Yes, Jean Carpenter.
Okay, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I live at the same building as Charles and Mark, the previous two speakers. As a prior board member a couple of years ago, I and other board members worked on this issue with the Good Times Hotel. I attended a hearing and spoke. I wrote a letter to the mayor and commissioners. I made many complaints, and it's a point of frustration now where they continue to do what they've done all along. After my having meted with several principals from the Good Time Hotel, they told me about the sound barrier wall they were spending millions on to erect, technology they were using to measure sound, decibels to stay within limits, whatever. And for a while, they were a little more tame, but in the past several months, I've noticed, probably because it's cooler, windows open, whatnot, but they've just gone off the rails again. And I've just recently learned about the many complaints that had been dismissed over this inconsistency of standards, which was an issue they raised several years ago. And I'm not sure why, if they're still claiming that, why that hasn't been resolved in some way. There needs to be that standard, a measurement, whatever, of sound they're exceeding. But their nuisance factor is getting out of control. And I totally support what Mark and Charles previously said here.
Thank you. Anyone else?
That's all we have on Zoom.
Okay. I'll let the board ask questions. But, Mickey, it's such a tough situation for us because, when multiple neighbors come in and complain, there's got to be merit to it. And the last time we were here, was it you that we got the video of the code violation and you walked code through the
I didn't see that, but I hear
I think it was you.
Oh, sir, we need
and
you
so
mic.
When Avi was here, I suggested that literally he go sit on his balcony and then have a walkie-talkie and let the people at the pool adjust the volume to the point where it wouldn't be disruptive to his life. I just don't understand why this is so difficult, because we don't want to take your CUP away. We want you to operate. It's a beautiful hotel. We want it to succeed, but it can't be at the expense of the residents' quality of life. And I just don't understand how difficult it is to just set the volume and lock it to where it's not. Yes. I mean, maybe I'm too simplistic, but I want to get an understanding, because, again, it's a very tough balance for us. But
I understand. And look, that's I think what's been attempted. And what I'll say is, understanding the concerns, and I hear them, and I want to wish I could myself solve them, but we have ways that we're going to try and do it. I know that, just so everybody knows, that it was mentioned by one of the callers, but Avi was transferred because, you know, GMs typically rotate.
He's no longer here.
So he's involved. He's involved with us. He's still with the company, but he's actually in St. Pete right now. There's another GM that's just started, like, you know, a couple weeks ago, Thomas Metting, wasn't able to be here today, but he is the new GM. So I know that Avi had reached out, I believe, to Mr. Fisher. Thomas, I'm happy to coordinate a meeting at your place. But I guess what I would like to say is two things. Number one, we keep saying six violations. It was 2 days. So a bunch of violations were issued, CUP and noise, but it wasn't like six different instances. I just wanted to correct that. As to me saying that they want to make a profit, like, we're not a charity. You know, we're trying to make a profit. I'm not also trying to balance. I'm not saying we're trying to lose money. At the same time, it has been a huge struggle, not just with the expenses that have been made to address the situation, but also a lot of lost profits in this operation. We get the Good Time continuously gets accused of having people on the street. That's required by the CUP to have monitors to make sure the noise is the problem that we've seen.
Right, but we learned last time that on the street,
right,
you
that's
may
what
not
I was
hear it, but elevated in a balcony. So all I'm saying is, why can't someone literally go sit in his balcony and then play around with
it? I can tell you that we'll do that. Okay. I mean, we did it before. And the good news, and by the way, I know it all sounds, you know, like, you know, the end of the world, but I can tell you some positives that I'm hearing right now. Yes, when they got the CUP, you know, it was pretty open-ended. It's only really 1 day for a couple of hours that seems to be the problem. So we need to figure that out.
Correct.
But it used to be Thursday, Friday.
And you guys know the volumes that work and don't. There's no complaints on Fridays. So at this point, it just needs to be adjusted down to what you guys keep it on Fridays or the earlier part of the day. And that's it. I mean, we want to see you guys succeed. And I really appreciate dealing with you guys because you guys have tried hard. But at this point, you guys are shooting yourselves in the foot because you keep getting chances. And it's a very simplistic, you know, we can turn in circles and overanalyze. You got to pull the volume down, and that's it, and find other ways of making profit.
So I will tell you, and I think we need to just do it again, because it seems like you heard, I know Mr. Moore was with Flamingo Park, but I think the three that were right were from the same building. So it seems like we can sort of narrow there. That's where the problem seems to be, primarily. So I'm happy to coordinate a meeting with Mr. Fisher and
new GM. Because the revocation hearing is next month.
I understand.
Again, no one wants to take your life.
No, I know.
We don't want to do that.
And listen, I was going into this week, frankly, I keep checking. I'm nervous about – I don't want to deal with a violation here. So I'm constantly in contact. I said to myself, no complaints, no violations. You know, we're in a good place. And then I'm hearing now all these folks wrote to you all. It's unfortunate. I really wish this – nobody wants us being here every month either, believe me.
Right.
But I commit to you that we'll reach out. I'll try and, you know, get – I'm happy to go myself.
Right. I'm just saying, Mickey, because next month is the hearing. And there's got to be some reconciliation with the neighbors where they're – supportive of it, because, you know, you'd think they'd love having a beautiful, nice hotel in the neighborhood, but if it's disrupting their lives every Saturday, and I'm not there, so I don't know, but when so many people say that, then there's got to be an issue. And I just don't, you know, everyone wants music at their pool, but there's got to be a volume point at which it doesn't disrupt them. There's got to be. So, you know.
And there was also stated from the residents, which I think is, you know, it was tolerable, is that, you know, they don't mind you guys having these kinds of volumes on special occasions on Art Basel or, you know, like 3-4 times a year where there's occasions. But by you doing it every Saturday, you know, you're burning your bridges where you're going to lose the whole CUP. And you want to be able to keep that for those special occasions.
Just one question.
Yeah.
I think it was... I forgot which caller, but someone mentioned the ability to, I guess, erect one missing wall that might help insulate all the noise, but the HPB has prevented that.
Well, I would state it that way. So we had an application. The original idea was, I think, 2 more feet on the wall. Mm-hmm. Our sound engineers thought that was the optimal height to really get the noise blocked in. In those negotiations with staff, this goes back now a year and a half, but I think what we ended up with, staff felt that those additional 2 feet were a bit too much. And granted, asking for the wall alone was a big ask. If you recall, we wasn't sure that we would get the wall. So that they ultimately were more comfortable with a slight reduction in height, which we agreed to. It wasn't like, I don't want to say the HPB prevented. It was a negotiation like everything else, and we still felt that with those reduction of 2 feet, we'd still be making a big impact. I think it has made a big impact, but there is some truth to the possibility. and I'm happy to explore it. What would it take to add a couple feet? Would it be prohibitive because it's already been built? I don't know the answer to that. But there was a point where we did originally want those two more feet, and our engineers thought that that was going to be material. So I'm happy to explore that, too, if it's feasible.
Between now and the next month, is it possible for your engineers to say, hey, seems like the biggest problem is coming from that building. With the extra 2 feet, is that the missing link? I don't know.
I'm happy to have the conversation. I'm not certainly the engineer, but I'm happy to have that conversation.
I hope not.
And we'll be back with you with an answer for that.
I have a question also.
Sure.
You know, a conditional use permit is just that. It's conditional.
Right.
And I remember hearing Dave a couple of years ago saying, we have the best sound engineers in the world, and we're going to fix it. What? Why has it not been fixed? I don't understand.
Sure.
I mean, if it were me and I was in that building next door, I would be, I don't even know. It doesn't make any sense.
So what I can tell you is the original system that was installed, and first of all, going way back now 3 years, the standard was actually incorrect on the CUP itself. It was calibrated, the original system, for the standard that was not actually written correctly. So we had to backtrack that. They ripped up the entire – I mean, literally every element of that system and those speakers on the pool deck were taken out. They brought in a new nationally, you know, a very recognized engineer, and they've brought in – so I can tell you that I think everyone will agree what we had 2.5 years ago, we are miles better today. It's not perfect, clearly, but there's been a massive improvement.
It's still being heard many streets over. I don't understand how, if you have the best sound engineers in the world, it's not locked down, and you – it doesn't – I don't understand. I really don't.
I think it used – just to be fair, I think some of the board members that were here will recognize, it used to be kind of heard everywhere. And it was we were like, whoa, we have a problem. Now it seems to be at a higher elevation because I've stood there on the ground floor where we have the monitors that we're required to have, and you really don't hear it. But there is a point apparently that there's some volume that goes higher. We're going to try and deal with that. And maybe the wall would fix it. I mean,
it's called the volume control knob.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty simple.
No,
yeah, Mickey, you get it. Like I said, we want you to succeed, but it can't be at their expense. So
understood.
Please, in the next month, just try to figure it out so that we can, you know, it would be great if everyone came with an agreement. Okay, we fixed it, but.
Okay.
Okay.
Understood.
Anybody else have any?
Brian.
Sure.
I guess because this is a progress report, we can't really make any changes to the COP. That would be next month.
Correct.
Right. You know, I think one of the problems, I guess, and Mickey, well, I guess he doesn't see it as a problem, but. You know, he mentioned when he went in front of the special master that the standard, the noise standard, was not clear, and that's why they were the violations were thrown out, and the standard was I call it weakened sometime last year. So what I would ask the staff to do for next month, come back with a different noise standard. Something that's, I mean, I'll leave it to you, that's less subjective, let's put it that way, because I intend to ask for that next month as a step one for them. You know, it just seems like when you say noise shall not be unreasonably loud, excessive, unnecessary, or unusual, that, you know, there is no way to quantify that. And yeah, when you have a good attorney in front of a judge, you can get out of it somehow. So, you know, that's a big problem. There are obviously noise violations happening. You know, I looked at the list of all of them through November and December. You know, there's an issue there. So, you know, I intend to ask for that as a step one. And, you know, you know, it was mentioned earlier, or Elizabeth mentioned it. You know, there's a simple thing called a volume adjustment. You know, it seems like every time you do some kind of physical improvement, it seems like, well, now it gives us an opportunity to turn the music up a little louder because it's going to be more contained. But it's sort of having a different effect. So, you know, I know I'm new on the board, but I've been involved with this with the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association for a long time, so I know all the history, and it just doesn't seem like this is ending. You know, we go on and on about changing this and this and this, when all you really have to do is lower the volume
right.
a little bit. And I think everyone will be happy.
And to your point, the standard is tough because before I think it was plainly audible, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's like if you hear anything. So you're right. I agree with you. That's the problem.
I just want to make one recommendation. The standard reference in the order is really just a reference to the city's noise ordinance. So I think what if the board would like conditions intended to address noise, that's something that staff can advise you on. But I wouldn't call it the standard. I would say, you know, conditions to mitigate the noise from this establishment.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement to ask staff for that. I think it was in your report that you would provide those for next session. But, you know, one of the reasons to your point was that, Mickey, you guys came before us in that February meeting of last year. It was almost a year to the day. And you said that the plainly audible was confusing and there was misinterpretations, and therefore the board. I was the only one who voted against this, I think. Maybe Gail did too. But I voted against striking that provision because it wasn't ambiguous to me. And now what's frustrating is that you were saying that that was ambiguous.
No.
Can
I clarify, actually? Because
yeah.
This is very different. I said standard generally, but the issue is the code officers in issuing the violation were looking at a separate part of the CUP, which incorrectly still says plainly audible, referencing something else. It wasn't that unreasonably loud is wrong. It was that the document has two different languages, and they were confused, and they were not issuing this based on unreasonably loud. They issued the violations based on the plainly audible standard.
That
was the issue.
So they issued these violations, which we all saw the body cam footage. They're clearly not the intent. It's clearly our intent to not allow that type of music being heard in the apartments like we saw in the body cam footage. So I think, obviously, if it's the plainly audible, you know, standard that gets us back to enforcement of it, then that's maybe what we need to do. I welcome you to submit your proposals for next week or next month about what you think is clear for you and clear for code. And, you know, let's literally write it out. Standing on this balcony, you should not be able to hear it. Standing on that balcony, you should not be able, you know, whatever it may be. We need a standard. And until then, here's where I am at right now. And I appreciate, we've always said this, we appreciate all that you guys have done. But where I'm at right now is that until there's a fix, the residents should not have to deal with it. As opposed to the alternate or the inverse, which is until there's a fix, you guys are still able to continue business as usual. And so I just want the onus to be on you guys as opposed to not to the detriment of the residents. So I think we're all in agreement here about what needs to happen. I would, you know, welcome you to present a history because there are new board members. I wasn't even here for, you know, a lot of the history. You know, about all the efforts you've done. I also, you know, and I recognize the other thing is that there are, you know, historic preservation or other design review board hurdles. Like, I'm sure you probably would love to put a roof or some sort of awning or whatever, and they maybe won't let you. I don't know. Maybe now things have changed and there's a new proposal from you guys, and given everybody's interest in you being able to succeed, maybe that there will be a change in that. You know, whether you're allowed to do some sort of cover or something like that. We appreciate all that you guys have done, but you see where we are now. I don't think we need more discussion on this.
And as Charles said, hearing like some, you know, light music in the background isn't, I think, what bothers them. So I don't want you to think the plainly audible means that if they hear anything, but it can't be disruptive. So anyway, I agree. We don't want to beat a dead horse, but just you had a month to try.
Right.
Working because we want everyone to be happy. I know that's hard. They always say in law, but good mediation is when neither side is happy.
Right.
We need to kind of get to that point where either both are happy or not. But
I got you.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Chair, two hands came up while the discussion was taking place. I don't know if you want to take those.
Yeah, but if they're redundant of the complaints we've already heard, not necessary. But if someone has something new to add, then go ahead.
We have Chris.
Chris.
And Chris, please state your full name for the record.
Good morning. This is Chris Reynaga at 730 Pennsylvania Avenue.
I just want to, if that's okay, do I need to get sworn in?
No. But just if you have something new to add, we've heard a lot of them neighbors, so please just keep it to something new or unique.
Okay. Yes, I am at a different location. I'm not on Euclid Avenue like the other three members that spoke or people that spoke. And I just want to hit 2 points just very quickly. Good Time and the City of Miami Beach were at my apartment doing sound testing. So sound testing can work if it's followed through. So my second point is that I am on the seventh floor. So regardless of how tall the wall will be, I believe the Good Time pool is on the second floor. I'm going to hear it regardless, and I am literally at the party every Saturday when I'm home after work, having to listen to it. And yes, it's disruptive and it's a nuisance. That's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
And then the other person, Andres Acion.
Good morning, Chair. I just want to know why can't you just put a decimal reader that in the neighboring building that alerts the manager, the staff there, or city code, and have a decimal reader amount so that this is not ambiguous as to do I hear the music, do I not hear the music, and just set that decimal reader to what it needs to be, and that's it.
Good point. That's kind of what I suggested to the attorney.
They've argued in the past, though, that you can't tell whether it's with a decimal reader. You don't know whether
where
it's coming from Good Time or not. So that was one of the objections in the past. But
You do have projection decimal readers.
There are. But what they were saying is that with a decimal reader, it's unclear whether it's actually coming from the Good Time. But I mean, Mickey can mention. But it's a good point. I don't think we need to.
Just wanted to mention, we actually, there was at one point during all this, a proposal at the commission level to consider a decibel pilot program. We immediately offered to participate. In fact, it's in our order, based on my proffer, that if that program was to be instituted, we would be the first to participate. We're still open to do that, but that hasn't happened.
But so, why didn't you just come forward and say, instead of getting all of these violations, we're just going to go ahead and implement that proactively?
Well, it wasn't for us to implement. It was a city system in lieu of other standards.
Could you do that on your own?
We would have, I mean, I
without
think
without the city
consider. I mean, yeah, just if it didn't have any value, there was a whole program that was going to be done. I don't know much about it, okay. But there was an idea. So we said let's do it to give take away the uncertainty that would be city sponsored, and we won't. But anyway.
I'm just asking because I'm kind of new and trying to learn. So
it's been a long road here.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Miggy, thank you. Jonathan brings up a good point. Can we do a time certain for the revocation modification hearing so that neighbors know when it is?
Sure.
With certainty. I mean, they're normally in the beginning. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, we usually put those at the beginning of the agenda.
So we
we're happy to.
10:30?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
We'll notice it for 10:30.
Last thing, quick, please.
Just because you had asked to come to my apartment to do the time thing, I know a couple of members mentioned this exact thing or said this point, but the noise on Friday is acceptable. The noise on Saturday is not acceptable. If you want to come and stand on my terrace and see that, I'm happy to do that.
I'm hoping they take advantage of that recommendation.
It just feels unnecessary. Like they know what they have it set on Friday and they know what they have it set on Saturday.
Right.
It's not a secret. And then just to correct, it's not 2 days. It was 3 days, 6 separate violations. You have the dates in the document.
Okay. Thank you, Charles. Very appreciated. Okay. Next is another progress report, Planning Board File 210446, Mila Restaurant.
Okay, just so this one was before the board last month as well. They had some violations related to sanitation, garbage in the back, and there were some concerns raised about how their valet operations are functioning. And so the applicant provided an update saying they're working with the city. The valet is actually provided by the city. They're also working on their security and ensuring that there's not queuing outside the property. Since the last progress report, there was an additional violation. There were some linens placed in the rear of the property, which were intended to be picked up. Code enforcement went. They immediately corrected the issue. I believe the applicant has an update on that. So we did recommend that this progress report be continued one more month. It looks like they are working on solving their issues, but they're not quite there yet. So.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, honorable board members. James Rao with Greenspoon Martyr. At 600 Brickell Avenue. Here with me today is Sheena Diaz, the Director of Operations for the restaurant. Online is my colleague, Adrian Noto, and one of the restaurant partners, Michael Verdard. We're here today to present a report to you on Mila. Rogelio read off some of the current updates, and we have a report to the board as well, which I think is all positive. There have been no new sanitation violations since we were last before the board, so the updated operational plan for the back of house that they implemented appears to be working very well. Since the last meeting, the operator also designated a full-time employee to operate and monitor the rear area, kind of like a dock master, if you will. In addition to that, and this is really to Sheena's credit as the director of operations, she's implemented a number of measures to ensure there's no problems here, but they've implemented a sign-in sheet, so they actually have their employee sign off on the inspection of the rear area. That's in addition to the steps that we mentioned last time with additional waste hauler pickups, an alarm system on the trash room door. Sheena's also installed a Ring camera on the door as well, so they can really monitor what goes on with that area, and continued inspections from the staff with pictures. She sent me a very nice picture of the rear area 2 a.m, which just looks spotless. Rogelio mentioned that there was one violation issued for a linen bin that was left out. That's under appeal, but we're prepared to discuss it. It was not stored outside. It was left out for the linen service provider to pick it up. It was taken in when they came back, and they basically instituted a system where they make sure that whenever something's being picked up or dropped off, that the new employee that's hired is there to monitor that, only bring things out when they're ready to be picked up and take them in as soon as they're dropped off, like an armored car at the bank almost. Really also mentioned that there were some there were no violations, but there were some comments about the valet area, which I explained last time. The valet area is actually operated by the city. It's not the restaurant's valet area. But there were some unlicensed livery drivers basically parking in the area and approaching customers and kind of clogging up traffic. So what the restaurant did is basically take the most effective step you can when you have any issue outside your restaurant, and they hired 2 off-duty police officers on the busy nights, Friday and Saturday. And when you do that, people tend to behave. So they haven't had any problems with these unlicensed livery drivers clogging things up. Sheena is here to answer any questions that you may have, but I think we've really put our minds to getting everything corrected and really updating their back of house operational plan, which has worked for them.
Okay, thanks. And I actually, just as disclosure, I actually met with Sheena like a few nights after that hearing, and she explained everything they're doing, and I really appreciate all your efforts, because thankfully these aren't neighborhood noise complaints. The linen, I don't know how that happened, yes. But the fact that there's been no more sanitary violations, which is what the concern was, is great. So I appreciate all your efforts. And I knew how sincere you were when I met with you about making sure it's all rectified. So unless you have something to add, I'll let the board, if they have any questions.
No, I don't.
All right. Well, before we – is anybody here in the chamber to speak on this? Anyone on Zoom?
Nobody on Zoom.
I didn't think there would be. Any questions?
No, the only thing I'll say is thank you. You know, we appreciate the efforts you're taking. I think it sounds like you really took the issues to heart and really made a good effort to fix them. And I'm sure the linen thing was very frustrating. Yes. But so just thank you for devoting that. I mean, this is what we want to see from good operators, yeah. Is devote. You know, we know how successful the operators are, to be able to just put one staff member there. I mean, it's a no-brainer, but you guys really seem like you're going above and beyond, so thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Hi, good morning. I do have a few questions, since it seems as if many of the items that are being discussed today are those that deal with the public realm. And I reviewed the conditional use permit that was attached to our agenda, and there's some discussion of the transportation demand management, and one of the items was that within 90 days after the BTR was issued, that there would be an update provided for that. So my question first is to the staff, was there an update provided to the transportation departments and or the planning department on their transportation demand management strategies?
I believe that was treated as a progress report. So they came before us with a progress report, and I believe that information was updated. I'd have to go back into my notes and check. It's been some time. If you give me some time, I'll get you a definite answer on that.
Certainly. Thank you. Because with a restaurant, an operation as large as this one is, I believe it said the occupancy is nearly 700 people, and the number of seats is over 300. You know, it puts quite the taxing on the public street system, and whether people are arriving by private car or arriving by rideshare, it is important that these strategies be not only vetted by staff before, but that we evaluate their effectiveness. So with this one, again, this is before my time as well, but it's important that when they're asked to come back with updates, that we have an update and we can evaluate how this works. And, of course, you know, can I ask a question as well? How many employees do you have?
We have about 250.
So 250 employees. And do you have a survey on how they arrive to work, how they commute?
Majority of the staff live around the neighborhood, so they walk to work or they have scooters. Some drive, and they have they use the Lincoln Garage to park their cars. We have a deal with them for early bird pricing.
And for those that bike or ride their scooters, is there secure parking for them on premise?
No. So most of the time, if they have to secure their scooters, because we also are compliant with the city fire code, there's no scooters allowed in the building. So they park their scooters or place them in cars of their other co-workers so that it's not on the premise.
And then the final question is, in the conditional use permit, it does say that a bicycle parking plan is required. Is that something that you submitted to staff as part of your the CUP application?
I am not aware of that.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm not aware either. I'm sure we typically, what we'll do is prior to licensing, we'll submit all the documents to planning staff. That's the way I've done it for 20 years. I don't remember in this particular case exactly what was done, but generally that's how we would do it.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Any other questions or comments? So, you know, unless the board opposes, I don't know why they have to come back in March. I would say if they get a violation, then bring them back. Otherwise, we're just going to hear the same, you know. So unless you all oppose, I'm willing to dismiss this. You know, the staff can bring the information you need or want about, you know, what their transportation plan is. But other than that, is everyone okay with that?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and dismiss it. You're done. Hopefully you stay citation free.
Yes.
I think you will based on the procedures you've implemented. And if a violation occurs, then we'll have you come back in March.
We will stay vigilant. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right. Do I need to move that or?
We would need a motion to conclude the progress report.
So moved.
Okay. Jonathan moved to dismiss it. Elizabeth seconded.
Okay. Motion second. And then we can do that by acclamation. It's just a.
Okay. Yeah. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay. Thanks. Hopefully we don't see you again. Sheena, thank you. All right. Now to a revocation modification hearing, planning board file PB210435, the Lincoln Eatery. I don't see Alfredo here.
Mm-hmm. Alfredo's not here. We have, I believe, the manager of the building on behalf of the
Okay, sir.
Yeah. So just we have real no.
Really oh yeah, I'm no sorry. Update. Let him make his presentation. My bad.
No real updates right now. We this has been before the board for a revocation modification hearing. Currently, for the new members, entertainment was suspended on the rooftop, so they are not allowed to have any entertainment on the rooftop operations as of right now.
And just to clarify for the new members, so there's an owner of the building, and then they had an operator tenant who was constantly allegedly violating, and then they had a lawsuit, and apparently correct me if I'm wrong, the tenant operator is no longer there.
Correct.
Okay. Correct, yeah. So they struggled to evict the operator. They finally got the operator out. Actually, when staff suggested that entertainment be suspended, the owner was okay with that. So very odd situation, but we're happy they were okay with that. Right. And so currently entertainment remains suspended. We wanted to work with the applicant to see how they want to proceed with the rooftop, and so we're in discussions with them. We have no formal conclusions and no recommendations as of right now, so we're just recommending that the progress report be continued until we figure out how.
Okay,
how
yeah, to last proceed. Time we heard it, when Alfredo presented, you all hadn't decided whether you were going to take it over yourselves or you were going to bring in another tenant. So
correct.
Just kind of give us an update and then okay. We'll.
Real quick. My name is Roberto Mosia. I am the building manager and also for the eatery. And I'd like to address and give an update report, if I may,
sure.
In what ownership has done in the past. The past operators are no longer there, and we have done some cleaning up that has taken us about 2 months to complete, and we have no plans in having any kind of activity on the rooftop as the previous operators that we had there. Just want to have a space where people can go and eat, have a drink, enjoy a sunset. No big parties. Yep. And I have a little brochure that ownership had prepared for you to see if you would like to see what the changes are. We also have a new operator that, you know, she's coming on board, and her name is Isabel. She's here with me, and it's something.
But, so are you saying the ownership is going to control and operate the rooftop?
No, we're gonna have the new tenant do it okay. Under our supervision. I have 19 years of hospitality and experience, and I'm also a former code compliance officer for the city of Miami Beach. Oh. So I know what needs to be done.
Okay.
You just follow guidelines and don't become a nuisance to the neighbors, and you will be fine. We haven't had any other violations since I started working there almost 2 years ago. I know what the city requires. We comply with everything, sanitation.
But are you going to seek reinstatement of the entertainment?
I'm sorry?
Are you going to seek reinstatement of the entertainment?
We want to have that option of having the, you know, for high-impact weekends when, you know, there are Travazzo or Food and Wine or, you know, for receptions, and to have that option.
Right.
It's something that we've had in the past. It didn't go as planned with
right.
Previous tenants, so we would like to have it back, of course.
And that's really, I'm assuming that's what you're talking about, once they develop a plan. Now, the old CUP, would that have to be done from scratch again, or you'll just... In other words, that old CUP is now void and moot, so that any new operator would come under a new CUP. I'm sure you could use a lot of the language, but
no. They are currently operating under one single CUP. It had a line that allowed for rooftop entertainment. Basically, when the board voted to revoke it, we struck that.
Got it.
So it would be.
So the only issue is whether we reinstate that.
Right.
And if they do that, they'll develop a plan with you on conditions. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I assume if we do bring it back, that we will have additional. Requirements that
okay.
They're going to have to follow.
No violations from previous months and years have been paid, and other issues also that were. We just want to do it. Right.
Yeah, it was the prior operator that caused all the problems. We understand that. So,
correct.
Okay, well, great. So, if you do seek entertainment to be reinstated, obviously, it's going to come with conditions so that we don't have all those violations again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
And they are allowed to use the rooftop. It's for food, for dining. They just the entertainment is the only thing that's prohibited right now.
Okay.
So
you understand what he's saying? The CUP is the same as it's always been. What we removed entertainment, your ability to have music, because the prior operator had so many violations.
Okay.
So if you want that entertainment reinstated, which would allow you to have the music or the DJ, whatever it is, then we just need to devise a plan with the city
okay.
that we'll ultimately review and approve just to make sure that it's properly done so that
okay.
there aren't violations.
Correct. I will pass this to...
Just so you understand, there's no entertainment right now. Sure. Come on up.
How are you?
Go ahead and introduce yourself with your name.
My name is Isabel Aguero. Nice to meet you all, and thank you for having us here. I've been in the hospitality industry for over 30 years. I did have a... previous bar lounge inside another eatery in South Miami, we did have noise complaints. And what I did was exactly what you said. I had the people upstairs listen. We had each other's phone numbers, and I adjusted the volume, and we worked together. And I believe that as much as we should be profitable, people should be able to sleep and relax at their homes. So, I came on board with them. I'm very excited. I would like to have an entertainment license, obviously, to up on the rooftop, but I will work with...
Yeah, I just wanted you to understand that it was rescinded, so we would have to seek to have it reinstated. I wanted you to understand the procedure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I understand that. Yeah. Okay?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, sure. Just to clarify, and I think you answered it, but if they do want entertainment, it would come back to us, and we'd have the opportunity to look over the entire CUP and make any changes or whatever that we need
to
do. That's right. And just one suggestion. I know you mentioned that you, for big weekend events in the city, you may want to do something. There's always special event permits that you can get if you don't want to go through the process of reinstating the entertainment.
Yeah.
You can, I guess,
that.
Do it that way as well.
Just to clarify, so this is a revocation modification hearing, so you do have the ability to modify the conditions. So the thought was once we come up with an idea as part of this revocation modification hearing, the planning board can decide whether they want to reinstate it or not and what those conditions are. So this is an open file right now.
So we need to continue this,
yes.
Right, until they come up with their plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Exactly.
So we don't have to take action today. We can move it to the next month?
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
Will someone move it to next month?
Yeah, I mean, the question is, does it make sense to move it to the next month?
Well, yeah, when do you think you'll have a – we don't want to have you come back just to say you're – when do you think you'll have a definitive plan on what you would like to do there?
Well, we have, Isabel came on board. We are telling her how the operation is going to be for the downstairs bar and for the upstairs bar. Your plan, our plan, is to have just a place where people can...
Yeah, that's not what I'm asking, Elizabeth. So here's the question. We can move this to March.
I would say March.
If that's
would be
enough
good.
Time for you to come with a defense, and you'll be working with the city in the interim to
absolutely.
Kind of them up, or would you rather do April to give you 2 months?
March is good.
Yeah?
March.
You'll be ready in March?
By March, we'd be okay by March.
What we want to see is some sort of presentation about what you're proposing for the rooftop and how you're going to control it. I mean, there already are restrictions. The speakers have to be, pointing. I know all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess what we're going to want to see is, what are you going to be doing up there? What kind of music? What kind of DJ? Something like that.
And it's March 26th, so it'd be exactly a month. I just want to make sure that's enough time so you don't come.
Correct.
Yeah, no,
March.
We already have something, and the idea is ambient music. We're not, no DJs, no parties.
I put some, ownership put a brochure together to let you know what we have done to stop any kind of a DJ taking control of the sound.
Great. Bring that next month.
Okay.
Right.
So we will do that.
So I just want to make sure you had the time. So if you feel a month is fine, we'll
absolutely.
Do that. Okay.
A month will be fine.
And I'll actually say, send that to Rogelio ahead of the next meeting so that we can all review it.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We will need to make sure, depending on what you're proposing, if you're making modifications to the rooftop, we may have to review it, make sure that everything is consistent. With what's been approved, if it's a simple reinstate with additional conditions, maybe
correct.
This can happen. But if you're modifying
we're
the rooftop.
We're not adding anything. We're going to be operating with 10 approved speakers, five on the wall, five small ones on the side. And we're looking into getting the speakers that are better quality that you don't need the sound. There's not going to be any loud parties.
All right, yeah, so bring all the details next
we will
month.
Have it.
I'll make motion to continue to next month.
Okay. I'll second.
Thank you.
Okay, Jonathan first, Melissa second.
Okay, Jonathan first.
All in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay. See you next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Previously continued items. Planning Board File 2306216, 624 Collins Avenue, the Isabel Restaurant. Michael Larkin.
Okay. Can you read the...
This application requested a conditional use permit for a neighborhood impact establishment for a restaurant for for a restaurant, and it was continued from our...
Speak a little louder.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yes. This application is requesting a conditional use permit for a neighborhood impact establishment, and it was continued from the December meeting that it was canceled due to the lack of quorum. The continuance was requested by the applicant, and I think Michael can explain. Thank you.
So I'll give a brief presentation. So this is a project that calls for the renovation of an existing commercial building, and it will include an open-air rooftop addition. This building is in the Ocean Drive Collins Local Historic District. It was built in 1922 and is classified as a contributing structure. And the applicant is proposing, as Alejandro stated, to operate a restaurant serving alcoholic beverages. It is a neighborhood impact establishment because it has an occupancy load of 493 persons, so it exceeds 299 people. So it'll provide for a ground floor with 110 seats and 200 occupants, second floor of 107 seats and 147 occupants, and a rooftop of 101 seats and 146 occupants, for a total of 318 seats and 493 occupants. The interior and the exterior area, they are proposed to operate from 12 p.m. to 1 a.m., with employees allowed to stay on site a little bit longer for deliveries and cleanup and all the other back-of-house operations. The second level has a so the entrance to the property will be through the side, through a corridor. Staff had some concerns about queuing, so the queuing will happen on the side, so that should not spill out onto the street. The second floor has a bar. The rooftop also has a bar and some open-air dining areas and some covered dining areas. There is no entertainment proposed. The applicant is only proposing ambient background music played at a level that does not interfere with normal conversation. So staff does not have too many concerns with the sound, and does not expect that any residents nearby will be affected by this. In terms of parking and valet, the applicant will use valet parking on Collins Avenue, and attendants will park the vehicles at city-owned parking spaces that are located near the venue. The applicant did provide a traffic study. And again, site access is through the main entrance on the south side of the property. The applicant does have a manager at all times that will be monitoring patrons, patron activity, and supervising and coordinating security staff. And staff has no real issues with what they're proposing for security and crowd control. So with that, staff recommends that the application be approved, subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
Okay, thanks, Rogelio. And for the new members, whenever there's an application like this, we need to make disclosures. I'm sure you know, Charles, as to whether you've met with or spoken to the applicant or received communications. So starting with Charles, any disclosures to make on this one?
Scott. Charles?
Scott, I'm sorry.
No.
No disclosures? Matthew?
No disclosures.
None.
None.
I left Michael Larkin a message, but I didn't hear back from him.
Oh,
no.
Not good.
You did?
Okay.
I have
all right.
A question, Brian.
Sorry about that.
No disclosures.
Did you leave a voicemail?
Yes.
I never listen to my voicemail.
Okay, well.
Text me. Text me.
I don't have that.
And it goes without saying for the new members that when you get communications, I'm assuming you have an email file that you should keep all your records. Okay. Michael?
So, good morning, Mr. Chairman, Board and Staff. Michael Larkin, turning South Biscayne Boulevard, here representing the applicant, Rebecca Garfield Spencer. Before I go any further, I just want to welcome the new board members. As you all know, this is a great board, and I'm sorry, Elizabeth, I didn't return your call. I will do better in the future. But as you all know, this is a great board to be on, so welcome.
What I wanted to know, just for everybody, I'm having a hard time. I've looked up the chef. I've looked up everything. It looks fantastic. I just am having a difficult time finding what kind of menu is it? I want it to be successful. My background is in retail real estate, so I don't want to see somebody come in and just, you know, it looks like they spent a lot of money, and it looks like a great plan.
It is, and my clients are British, so I don't want to make a joke, but it's British cuisine, which would be an oxymoron at times. And they're probably going to be very upset at me that I just said that, but Rebecca Spencer is on Zoom, and she'll be able to discuss with you the menu. She's going to be managing
it. And I love London, so.
They're going to be mad at me now, but that's all right. So Jose Gomez is our architect, And my colleague Emily Balter is here in the room. On Zoom, we have our traffic engineer, Alfredo Selli, our sound engineer, Andy Swerdlow, and Rebecca Spencer, as I just mentioned to Elizabeth, will be available to answer any questions you might have with regards to specific operational details that were not in the operations plan. So the applicant's gone to great lengths to adaptively reuse this historic structure. It was originally apartments, then retail, and now their fine dining establishment. We went to the HPB in December. We obtained a unanimous approval for the renovation and restoration of this building, including the rooftop addition. A CUP is necessary based upon the occupancy of this space, which is going to be three levels. No entertainment is proposed, and the incredible dining experience will be the show. This operation is ideal for this commercial corridor. It will have a minimal impact on the surrounding neighbors, one of which is the City Garage to our north. You have the Good Time Hotel to our west. You have commercial neighbors really to the east and to the west. This site, unlike many others, has extremely well-documented history. They purchased the site even knowing that the conversion from retail use to restaurant use is incredibly difficult because of all the development fees that come. Restaurants consume a lot more water, sewer. The road impact fee of the county is astronomically high, and they're grappling with all of this, but it is their intent to open this restaurant by August. So all that's going to go forward very quickly. They partnered with British chef Richard Neat on plans for a high-end global fusion restaurant called Isabel's. Isabel is their daughter's name, so they are heavily invested in this project in more ways than one. This application is consistent with the purpose of the MXC to encourage a substantial restoration of existing structures. In fact, I did a site visit just this past weekend. Joe Manning had a celebration of life for her husband who just passed about 3 weeks ago. She invited everyone up to the rooftop of Mitch's place at the Sherbrooke. And afterwards, I took my bike and I started going all the way. And I saw it was sad. There are several empty storefronts in this area. There are some spots of light. In the old Urban Outfitter space, there's a brand new corporation that has relocated its corporate headquarters there, which is great. But in large part, this is no longer really a retail corridor. So the question becomes, what is it going to be next? And I think the price points are going lower, allowing opening up to more entrepreneurs like the Spencers to come in and spend a great deal of money to try to repurpose this building from a failed retail use to now restaurant use.
Is this, Michael, is this the same group that has the Isabel and Lincoln Road?
No, it's different. It's a different group. It's their first foray into our city.
I just want to make sure that you're saying no entertainment now. You're not going to come back in 3 months and ask for entertainment and...
There, you know, sometimes a program at a hospitality spot requires entertainment in order to make ends meet. But every different, you know, venues differ. And here they're going to depend upon the food, sales more than anything else. So they don't need entertainment. So we won't need to come back to you and ask for entertainment. So I know that can be a little bit controversial.
So right. That's a no. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. The hours of operation Tuesday through Sunday, noon to 1 a.m. Mondays are closed in order to rehabilitate the restaurant on a weekly basis. The outdoor bar counter and speakers that are on the rooftop will be closed at midnight, and staff has inserted a condition that says, and Rahel, you have to help me out. I think it's no noise from this venue can be plainly audible within, I don't think it said, I think it said within a residential unit or any residential use adjacent. Is that correct?
That sounds correct. One second to locate it.
I'm highlighting this because I know that Council Tower South is 200 feet away to our south, but I do not feel it will be any nuisance to them whatsoever. But I just want, but Rahelia was thoughtful enough to include this stringent condition already in the staff rec.
Yes, sound generated from the venue, including but not limited to recorded music and patron conversations, shall not be plainly audible from residential buildings near the subject property. That's correct.
That's a tough condition, but we intend to abide by it. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Jose, my colleague, my friend, and he's going to walk you through his design for this.
Good morning. Jose Gomez, Bales & Gomez Architects. We're the architects for the project for the second time. We actually renovated this building back in 2000. So very proud to come back to the building and reusing it in a different way. So this is the location of the building. I think we all know where it stands. So this are a couple of images of the historic building. It's been there since the 20s, and pretty much we're keeping the same, restoring it and keeping the same design as the original. These are a couple of images of the neighborhood. The interiors of the building is in great, excellent conditions. So you can see all the structure has been redone since 2000. And plus, we're going to have to do a little more reinforcing for the rooftop. So these are some interior images of the existing conditions. These are our neighbors in the back and in the front and the north. Our site plan, I think we gave you a copy of a little update of this site plan. We were not showing the bicycles on this one, but you have it in front of you now. Pretty much the building will stay the same with the same footprint, where the only thing that is being added to the building is in the rear. On the south side, you see a stair that is going to access the second floor. Other than that, the footprint of the building stays the same. This is a conceptual diagram of what we're doing. When we go up in the roof, we're putting the addition, setting it back from the street. At the same time, is blocking any of the sitting areas are not looking to the buildings in the rear, in this case on the west. This is the ground floor. In the back, we have the kitchen area. Front, you see that it's all restaurant, just dining area, and a small bar on the north side of the building. Second floor, mostly dining area, kitchen, back of the house on the west side. Rooftop, you can see that we concentrated the sitting facing Collins. The rear is blocked by the mechanical equipment and back of the house to serve the dining area. This is an image from the street looking northwest. You can see that the main entrance really is going to be on the south side. We have a glass canopy in order to protect from the rain, but the building has been will be fully restored based on the historic value of the facade. This is a rooftop view of it. You can see how the rear is being blocked from the neighbors, and we have the parking garage to the north of us and the historic building just to the south of us. This is another image looking southwest of the rooftop. It's a small area. It's very intimate. This is not a very large space, and it's set back from the street so that you don't see the from the sideline from across the street. You don't see the addition. And again, this is another view of the rooftop. These are just the elevations. I can just run quickly through them. This is a study of the sight lines, so that this demonstrate that the new addition all sits back from Collins. Section of the building showing you the rooftop. This is just a chart for the occupancies, 493 maximum occupancy. This is a structural drawing. We use this presentation for historic preservation. Wanted to show them that the building was fully renovated. And my last slide is the rear of the building. You can see that the addition that we're putting on the rear blocks any noise or the view of what's happening in the roof. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's all we have. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal. I'm happy to answer any questions you all might have.
Well, I think Elizabeth would like to know the menu.
All right. So,
I do have one question.
Sure.
On the new amended site plan, what are the new fog control devices? What is that?
You want to explain?
Sounds like something you need in London.
I'm not FOG fog.
Right here.
It's DERM. It's for the grease trap. It's for DERM.
Okay.
But to answer your question in a more precise way, is like the change that in this amended site plan we pointed out to you is like, I know Matthew is a huge proponent of alternative means of transit, bicycles, and so we're doing what we can to show that yes, there is room in the southwest corner of the property to put enough bicycle racks to have at least 8 bicycles, which is a good amount.
If I can, let me start with Scott. I'm going to do it orally. If you have any questions or...
Yeah, just, I mean, it looks like a great project. I mean, I just, you know, whenever something, or whenever I hear now, you know, an active rooftop, even if there's no entertainment, right away we start thinking what it may morph into. And I know the plan is to have no entertainment and just background music, but it's just something to be wary of because, you know, as long as I'm on the board, you know, if things be things like this become a problem, I don't think I want to see it drag on like some other applications do when it comes to correcting the problem. So I would just say be aware, you know, be aware of that. One other quick question. I know you said you want to open by August, but you need to do some structural work. Obviously, you have 150 people on the roof. Have you submitted plans yet for structural and all that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, August, I know, it's optimistic.
Yeah, I wish
in
you
our
luck
city,
with that.
But,
that's all.
But we still want to try. Yeah, I'd have a goal, right?
Yeah.
Matthew?
You didn't say which year, August.
Thank you, Mr. Larkin. And I appreciate that supplement that was distributed to us showing that, you know, the question I asked the prior operator about their bicycle parking plan, certainly you did your homework and know that that would have been one of the questions. So thank you. I think I counted 16 total spaces. And if you've taken any walks around South Beach, you see that these racks are filled to the capacity by a lot of times by employees of the hospitality business. So I think that will be appreciated. I do want to draw a little note, though, and ask a couple questions about deliveries. I know the draft order mentions about using the alley or the on-street loading spaces. And I wanted to know what my fellow colleagues think on the board about, you know, Collins Avenue is a narrow urban street, and the delivery vehicles that most of the food purveyors use are very large. Would you be agreeable, perhaps, to a condition that you'd be required to use the alley only, except for smaller vehicles? So I'm thinking vehicles smaller than, and perhaps Rogelio can help me with this, the SU-30, vehicles smaller than that, delivery vehicles, could perhaps use on street, but anything larger than that should use the alleyway.
The only concern I have, Matthew, is like, when a delivery truck is coming on Collins, you know, they're heading southbound, right? And the larger ones would just kind of pull over to the side. If you have a larger delivery truck trying to negotiate the radius turn in an alley, particularly an alley coming up from 6th Street, it's going to be a very tight turn. You know, I think that the smaller vehicle could certainly do it, and I don't think we'll be serviced by the larger vehicles every day of the week. I understand what you're saying, but I just think that it's almost the reverse. That the larger vehicles, if they're going, for instance, you would enter 6th Street from Washington, you'd take a right, you'd be eastbound, you get to the alley, you take a left, you try to negotiate that turn, and it's not a very wide turn. So I would just be worried about that.
So I understand that concern. I think this brings us to another topic, which is the proliferation of the large tractor trailer type, whether they're Cisco or Cheney Brothers. You see them all around South Beach and Mid Beach and North Beach, and you see the problems that they can cause. In fact, the other day, back to Mitch's house, there were dueling tractor trailers trying to pass each other on 9th Street, and they couldn't get by. So it may not be something we tackle today, but the size of the delivery vehicles is certainly something that does have an impact on the neighborhood.
I agree.
And to the extent possible, you know, the restaurants down here, these high-end restaurants, they have a lot of economic pull with their companies that they purchase from. So whether we start today or we look at this going forward, it is something that we could have an impact on and perhaps investigate how we can have smaller vehicles.
I agree. I think Nick would probably want to weigh in on that in the future if you all want to bring that as a discussion item. I think it would be hard for the city to adopt a regulation maybe like prohibiting larger delivery trucks. There might be some type of federal issue or...
There is a preemption issue, but it's the sort of thing that we can address with the kinds of conditions that you do, like hours and where loading can take place, those kinds of things.
It's a legitimate issue to explore for sure.
And then the last question that I have of you is a TDM status report. Mm-hmm. So looking at how many employees, where they travel from, how they get there, the valuable information in the planning process going forward. So as part of your normal updates that you provide to planning staff, if this is something that could be also provided.
Yeah. I think within 90 days of the issuance of the BTR, which is almost always coincides with the opening date, we could submit to staff a report that just shows how many of our employees are walking, biking, taking mass transit.
Actually, Mr. Chair, one more question.
Sure.
So in your transportation demand management plan, you do talk about economic incentive programs such as subsidized transit passes. It doesn't seem necessarily that this plan is 100% fleshed out. Is that something that you will be looking to do?
We could agree to do that as a condition.
Okay.
That's fine. That's a pretty common thing, and it helps the employees.
And then that could be also information that's provided in a status update, how many employees are taking up that offer.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
I agree.
Jonathan, anything? No? Yachiel?
You're getting good.
He got it.
No questions, though. It took him a few years, but
I know. Melissa? Better late than never.
Yeah.
Anything from you?
No, I'm good. Elizabeth? Thank you.
No?
Actually, I wanted to ask, what would be your thoughts on not modifying the CUP for a period of 2 years after you're issued the CUP?
I think that it's hard to predict the future, Elizabeth. I'd be worried to do that. For instance, the way that a substantial modification to the CUP is defined, if you add 1 square inch of floor area, you first need to modify the CUP. So there could be an unforeseen circumstance where we actually need to do some more floor area within the property for whatever reason I can't contemplate. So I'd be worried to do that.
What about for entertainment?
I think we could do that.
Okay, great.
Is there anybody here in chambers to speak on this item? Anybody on Zoom?
No hands raised on Zoom.
Okay, someone want to move it?
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve.
In that motion, I've heard two conditions, one on adding transit passes for
employees.
The TDM plan, and then another one prohibit modifying the order for 2 years related to entertainment.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Okay, so with those revisions.
I'll still make a motion to approve.
Okay.
I'll second.
Matthew?
I'll second.
Great. Okay.
You know, just to thank you all very much. Just to Elizabeth's point, though, like, you know, it's frustrating because the definition of entertainment is so expansive, you know, and if this operator wanted to bring in a piano, they would not be able to do so because the piano is treated as live performance.
I think I should have clarified that, and I will make that clarification now. It's for rooftop. I would like to see no rooftop entertainment because we're already experiencing this just two streets over.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's your
intent
here. I just want to head that off at the pass.
I understand completely.
Thank you. That's fine.
So that modification, Rogelio?
Got it. No modifications to rooftop entertainment for 2 years.
Correct.
We'll wordsmith it a little more, but
thank you. All right.
Roll call.
Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Cement, who
you have to vote
second.
Matthew
seconded. Okay, our first roll call with the new members. Ms. Beatty?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Goltanoff?
Yes.
Ms. Latone?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Thank you, Michael, all for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for your presentation. Thanks for your presentation. Okay, next item is, what time is it? Yeah, we got time. Planning Board File 230638, lot split at 6470 Allison Road.
Yeah, this application has been requesting a division of land lot split to divide the existing site comprised of three platted lots into three individual buildable parcels.
So this site actually came before, two of the three lots that are impacted by this proposal actually came to the planning board last year for a lot split where they were moving the property lines. And if you're moving property lines, one of the lots by definition is being split to then add that land to the adjacent lot. So now those same two lots are now being are now here before you. In addition to those two lots, there's one lot to the north, and these are located on Allison Island. They're 644, 6450, and 6470 Allison Road. And so the proposal here is for the middle lot of the three affected parcels to be cleared, to be demolished, and then that lot will be divided amongst the two adjacent properties. So this lot split will actually result in there being one lot less on the island than exists today. So the proposal will result in two lots. Each would be 137.5 feet wide. They would have each lot would have 29,631 square feet. As we typically do, we looked at the existing construction on Allison Island. We looked at proposed construction on Allison Island, and it appears while the average unit size today plus the typical 20% allowance that we provide for is not yet 50%. It's heading in that way. There is a lot of construction on the island, so staff does not is not proposing any limits below what the code allows of 50%. However, staff is recommending that there be a condition that the applicant shall not seek any variances to exceed the 50% unit size restriction. So staff has no objections to the proposal. Staff recommends that the planning board approve the lot split subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
Okay.
Good morning again. Mickey Marrero here on behalf of Matthew Sidman and his family, the owners of one of the lots. With me today is my colleague Nick Rodriguez. On Zoom, we have folks from Max Strang Architecture, Kobe Karp's office, and probably several other interested folks. Here to you right now, unlike an hour ago, on very different terms, we actually have a group of neighbors cooperating, working together to achieve something that, thankfully, staff is in support of. My client, Mr. Sidman, came in a couple months ago. You all approved that initial lot split, even though it really wasn't a split. It was an aggregation and a moving of a line. But we were there, and then since then, he's been speaking to his neighbor, and what they've agreed to, you know, if you all are willing to proceed, is basically moving the line so they both have additional, basically recreational and outdoor space, and improve their living space. They've done it sort of a neighborly way to work together.
Oh, I see. So the third lot is going to be split among two different owners?
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. Okay. And Nick's going to go into the much more detail in a second. And essentially what Mr. Sidman and his group did was they went around to all the neighbors. Every abutting neighbor has given you a letter of support that you have in your file. So, you know, happy to be in under very different circumstances here. It's really a collaborative effort. We have some folks that just want to make their properties a little bit better.
What's currently on the three lots?
One of them is vacant,
right.
And there's two homes in different states of development.
So it could be three homes technically.
If originally it could be three homes,
right, and this now is, it's going to be two homes,
right?
Okay,
right. And like I said, we fully agree with all staff's conditions. We agree with their analysis. With that, I'd like to pass it to Nick to go through the presentation, and obviously we have any available to answer any questions that you have.
Good almost afternoon. Nick Rodriguez on behalf of the applicant. I will just run through the presentation. Rogelio did a pretty good job summarizing it, but hopefully we can anticipate all your questions here. So this is just the context. We're on Allison Island on Indian Creek Waterway, and we just wanted to point out, since these are going to be larger lot sizes, typically we look at the same lots on the same street, but we're right across the waterway from some of the largest lots in the city in the LaGorse Island neighborhood. So it's in terms of context, this area is an area of larger homes and larger lots. These are the three properties, Lot A being 6470, Lot B and Lot C being 6450 and 6444. And these are the lot lines as modified by the lot split that the lot line modification lot split that Rogelio mentioned, we got approved in June of last year. So these are the current existing lots, two 100-foot lots in the middle, a 75-foot lot. And what we're asking to do is eliminate that center lot, the 75-foot lot, and take half of Lot B, aggregate it to Lot C, half of Lot B, aggregate it to Lot A, so they have some larger home sites.
And the homes that are already on those outer lots are going to stay there. So there's no construction going on?
There will be. I'll show you the rendering. So
okay.
Lot C currently, the home is under construction, the new home. So they're just going to be making an addition. Lot A, they have an approved home, but they're waiting on this so that they could do a slightly larger home. We'll show you the renderings of what that's going to look like. And then Lot B, they're demolishing the home, and there's no plans for that property. So that's really what the genesis of this was we have a vacant lot between us. Let's just split it and make our lots bigger. So these are kind of the numbers, the numerical summary of it. The lots are going to be 29,631 square feet and 137.5 feet wide. It's not the only 29,000 square foot lot on the island. In fact, on the island, there's a 42,000 square foot lot on the north side. So it's not really out of context. As Mickey mentioned, we went to all of our neighbors. All of the abutting neighbors support this. To our knowledge, there's nobody objecting to this on the island or within the neighborhood. So this is 6470. So this is the north lot. That existing home on the north lot is proposed to be demolished and replaced with this home that's been approved by the DRB. They have a building permit. They could start building it today. What they're waiting on is to have the additional area to go back to modify their plans and do slightly increase the size of the guest quarters in the front, and they have the extra area to add a tennis court. That's what, really what the neighbor on the north side is seeking. On the south, well, this is another view of the home. You see the tennis court. It's really the same home with the tennis court, and the guest structure in the front is slightly larger. This is the home that's currently under construction. It was under construction in June when we were here last. Now it's almost done. So there's not really anything changing about the existing home that's being built on 6444 Allison. But what they would like to do is just add a small guest home and a cabana on the extra green space. We want to point out that the existing home was built with a 10-foot setback. The setback is based on your lot width. When we increase the lot width, our required setback increases. So we're going to have a non-conforming setback. It's still 10 feet, and the neighbor to the south is fine with it. But to compensate for that, we're providing an almost 25-foot setback on the north side, so creating a lot of green space on that side. And that's really it. We have some backup slides if you guys have questions, but we'll just take your questions.
Okay. Is there anybody in chambers speak on this? Anybody on Zoom?
No hands are raised on Zoom.
Okay. Any disclosures to make by any of the board members?
I did bike by Allison Island, and I took a detour and made a site visit.
Okay. All right. Any questions? Start on the end with you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any issues with it. I understand the lot coverage and unit size are going to be a little larger, and you have an existing once the lot becomes bigger, that 10-foot setback would be non-conforming. I'm okay with that. I would only ask that something be added to the condition that says for any new construction other than what's been approved already, no variances. So in other words, design.
I think, do we need a setback variance just not conforming or no?
New variant. The one that, the 10-foot one, I'm fine with that. The building is.
So, we will need, I think, technicality, a variance for the unit size, because the code says if you have a lot split of any kind, even though here it's the opposite, we're aggregating, you still have to get a variance for it.
Those I'm fine with. The unit size, the lot coverage, and the 10-foot the setback. But
so
anything,
beyond that, we're not.
In other words, when you go in front of the DRB for the modifications and you find out that something's just not going to fit and you want to another variance for something, a setback or whatever, we would be opposed to that. So I'd like to see something in the order that says, other than those variances we just talked about,
right,
no further variances.
Can you just clarify which types of variances that you're worried about, just so I understand?
Any variance. I mean, there's a zoning code which mm-hmm. says you could build so high, so big, certain setbacks and everything.
So you're not trying to target anything specific?
No, right now, right. They're going to have basically one. If I understand, the north lot is going to be new construction completely,
right?
And on a much bigger lot. So what I'm saying is, you should be able to fit a home on that lot without asking for any.
So
any
I think
variances.
We're fine with that. As long as the ones, I think we're helios clear on the ones that we've already discussed.
Those are fine.
Okay,
those are fine.
Would it be? So there's two. One already has a home that's under construction that's approved. Would it be, and I'm not sure if that home ever needed to do any remodeling, what the impacts would be. For the new home that's going to be on the northern lot, that no variances be sought on that lot whatsoever.
Correct. And the one on the south, the 10-foot setback is fine. That's okay.
Other than the variance we would need for the unit size and lot coverage.
And that one as well.
Yeah, because they...
Okay. So you want to add that
rail? That would only be for the southern home. You wouldn't need that variance for the for anything on the north lot.
I think on the north lot we will need it because they're trying to add and make the home a little bit bigger. So they don't want to be stuck at the 40-25 because the existing homes don't follow the platted lot lines.
Oh, understood. Right. Understood.
Yeah. So because they don't.
Yep.
We're
stuck
okay in
with
that
provision. For both
yeah.
homes.
Okay.
Yeah. Both homes. I just don't want to see anything new. In other words, any new plans that go in front of the DRB asking for more variances.
I think we understand, and we can work out some language with Rogelio to capture the variances that we know that we need and then eliminate all of the other ones.
Matthew?
Only variances identified prior something.
For unit size, correct. Lot coverage, and the non-conforming setback. Other than that, no height, no anything like
okay,
that.
Okay, so we're going to add that to the conditions. Matthew?
Unit size, lot coverage.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the presentations. When I did bike by, and perhaps there is some sort of nuance here that I'm not understanding, but it looked like there were two houses under construction, one on the north and one on the south. So is that – were my eyes deceiving me, or was the north house actually under construction?
At 6470?
Yes.
I haven't been to the site. I know they have a building permit, so they could be getting started with the demolition in anticipation of this being approved. But they did get a home approved, and they have a building permit, so they could be trying to set up the site for them to start the construction of the new home.
Because it did look like it was well underway. They had framing, concrete blocks. They were on second level.
I just confirmed with the client. It is under construction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you. And then this is perhaps for staff here, but I was struggling a little bit with some of the review criteria, specifically about the lot sizes. And talks about being equal or larger to the majority of the existing sites. And you go through and do the analysis, and the average lot size is 19,000 and change. The most common lot size is 16,000, and the proposed lot is nearly 30,000. So about 50% larger than the average lot size. Is there a concern here, or why is it that the review criteria only just wants to make sure it's larger, but doesn't have any sort of contextual guidance for us here?
So the criteria was intended to ensure that you're not splitting lots, tend up with more lots than what the average typically provides for. It really doesn't contemplate, it doesn't expect that too many lots are going to be unified. Generally, when you're unifying lots, that doesn't require a lot split approval. Okay. That would generally just be approved administratively. Were it not for the fact that they wanted to, that the middle one needed to be split to add to these lots, they wouldn't be before this board.
Right.
Okay.
Probably to make sure we don't increase density.
Yeah.
Because if you split too small, then you build too many houses. And I think that's the
that's the crux of it. Yeah. That's why that's the intent of requiring lot splits to come before the planning board.
Thank you,
Jonathan.
No questions.
I just want to say, did I just skip
that? Yeah, no, he has
right,
no question.
Wave that off. I think it's usually a positive when we're adding some more green space to some of these developments. I think overall we've seen too many of these houses maximize building over property and without much green space left on these new developments. So I think, we need to be encouraging these kinds of projects that even though they're a little bit out of proportion sometimes with what's already in the neighborhood, we know there's a lot of construction and houses that are being torn down and rebuilt. And I think if we the more of these properties that are expanding their green space is tasteful and it's a bonus for the neighborhood.
Elizabeth?
I echo Melissa. More green space is better. I do have one question. What is the condition of the seawall that runs along those three lots? And are you making any improvements to that, or is it just...
I'm not sure. I think it hasn't come up. I think they probably are likely going to have to do it as part of the construction of the homes, but...
I know the building department is taking a strong position on seawalls. So,
okay. Well, Rogelio, I thought years ago we approved something, an ordinance, that anyone that bought a new home with a seawall, it had to be raised and fixed.
Yes. As part, when you're doing new construction, you have to improve the seawall to the new standards, so they'll have to raise the seawall I believe the elevation is 4.26
right.
NGVD.
So that would be, by definition, they'd have to comply with that, right?
Yeah, they would have to, if the seawall is not already up to code, they would have to build a new seawall.
And to be uber clear, I just confirmed that it is being replaced.
Wonderful.
It's all being
Thank
replaced.
You.
Thank you.
All right. Someone want to move it?
I will.
Okay. Move to approve.
I'll move.
Approve,
move to approve.
With the modifications regarding variances.
Right. With, yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion by Ms. Latone.
You memorialize Scott's comments?
Yes, no variances, no additional variances regarding unit size, setback, lot coverage beyond those identified in the plans.
Right. So,
and I may have to do some wordsmithing on that, but that's the idea.
All right, do you have a second?
We do not have a second.
Okay, you got one now, Scott.
Scott, okay. All right, your first motion and your first second. Okay, so roll call. Ms. Beattie.
Yes.
Mr. Cement.
Yes.
Mr. Elias.
Yes.
Mr. Frieden.
Yes.
Mr. Goltanoff.
Yes.
Ms. Latone.
Yes.
Mr. Needleman.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you all. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Presentation.
Thanks so much. Good afternoon.
Okay. We'll do one more, and then I'll let you guys have your lunch. So we'll start with new applications. Item 10, Planning Board File 230642, 400 Alton Road, La Terraza Restaurant.
This application is requesting a conditional use permit for a neighborhood impact establishment for an alcoholic beverage establishment or restaurant located on the top floor of the building, whether fully enclosed, partially open, or open to the sky, including all open-air portions above the rooftop, which is located on a property that is within 200 feet of a property containing residential units.
Okay, so this is a request to, as Alejandro stated, to allow for the operation of a restaurant with alcoholic beverage establishments on the pool deck. This is the fifth level of the Morano Grande condominium. This is a restaurant that previously existed, but when they remodeled their pool deck, they did a lot of construction on the site, and so the restaurant ran away. Since that time, the city adopted an ordinance that requires that any alcoholic beverage establishment that's within 200 feet of a residential building has to get a conditional use permit as a neighborhood impact establishment. You may recall it came before the planning board last year. So as a result, now they want to reinstate the restaurant, and they need to obtain a conditional use permit.
When you say within 200 feet, it's in a residential.
It is. So, yeah, they're right. Within 200 feet.
Including its own building.
Including its own building.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. And you got the icon right next door.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So because of that, they're getting a conditional use permit. They submitted plans. The plans include 48 seats. It provides for hours of Wednesday through Monday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. They are allowed to serve the pool area as well. The restaurant is allowed to serve the pool area. There's no entertainment being proposed. We've included some conditions to ensure that residents are not bothered by any sound that could be generated from the site. They've provided a delivery and sanitation plan indicating that deliveries will occur 3 days a week around noon. The trash pickup will occur 3 days a week around noon, and that deliveries would normally be made between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. The building is a residential building. It has on-site parking. The restaurant will only be for residents of the building and their invited guests, so we do not anticipate any additional demands for parking from the outside. The property is only open to restaurants, so there's really no issues with security and crowd control. So with that, staff recommends that the application be approved, subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
Okay, before you start, any disclosures? Anybody meet with the applicant? No? Okay. All yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, honorable board members. Again, James Rao with the Greenspan Martyr Office at 600 Brickell Avenue. Here today on La Terraza at Morano Grande Condominium. Here with me today in the audience are Michele Merlo, our client, and his general manager. Joining us also is the condominium assistant general manager. And on Zoom, we have the condominium president, the condominium GM, and my colleague, Adrian Noto, who is also an attorney working on this application. Just to give you some context, Mr. Merlo is a restaurateur that's no stranger to our neighborhood. I also live south of Fifth Street in this neighborhood, and has and currently operates the restaurant at the Continuum. So he has a lot of experience in this area. To give you some context on why we're here, as Rogelio mentioned, this is not on the rooftop of the 40-story structure. This area sits on the pedestal that contains a parking structure, but the planning department considers that to be a rooftop as well. I just want to explain it's not a traditional rooftop. In addition to that, and I think this will probably go down in history as the least intense CUP application with 48 seats, so it may have stuck out
why
we're here.
Is the restaurant a tenant, or is it owned and operated by the Murano Homeowner Association?
I'm going to let Mr. Merlo answer.
I'm just curious, and I don't mean to interrupt. I was curious if it's a tenant coming in.
Good morning, everybody. Michele Merlo. The restaurant is one of our company, and we lease it from the building.
Okay, so you're a tenant of the Murano. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And they are obviously
subsidized. You
know, coordinating with the
and you do the same thing at the Continuum over by the tennis courts?
17 years.
Okay. I know and well. We you do a great job there. I know well.
We operate this restaurant La Terrazza from 2008 to 2020. Then COVID and a lot of other situation. They tried two operators. They failed miserably fast, so they're calling us back, and we're willing to do, but we've been interfered from this new law. There is no impact. We're serving just the client or the building, and that's it.
Okay. So, yes, I was just explaining. It's a very small restaurant, and it's only for the residents and their invited guests, so it may have stuck out as to why this was getting a conditional use permit, similar to, like, a 700-seat restaurant would get. Right. It's really because of its location.
It's right off the pool, right?
Right off the pool. Right. Okay. So, yeah, you can see the bay from the venue. The applicant is in agreement with all the conditions. Obviously, we're here with the condominium association's leadership and management, so they're fully aware of what's going on. And we're here to answer any questions that you may have, but those conditions will be sufficient. It closes, just to highlight, at 6 p.m., so that's why I said I think it will be the least impact restaurant that we've ever applied for. And we're here to address any questions the board may have.
All right. Is anybody in here to speak on this? Anybody on Zoom?
Andres Acion.
Andres?
How are you all doing? I'm also an owner at Murano Grande and an icon, and I frequent also the patio over at Continuum. They're amazing operators, and they're just going to be an asset to the community. So I look forward to them being able to open soon and get up and running. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No? Okay. Any questions from the board? Scott? Matthew? Anybody?
Just one question. Does the Murano Grande have a loading dock?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any loading zones on the street within the vicinity?
No.
Okay.
They go directly in the receiving area.
Okay. So is it okay if we modify the order so that it specifies that you must use the loading dock for deliveries?
We do all the time. We are very sensitive.
Okay.
We have Monty's on the other side, Fogo the Chow on the other side, so we are good neighborhood. We know each other a long, long time.
Thank you. Now, the reason why I ask is I live in the neighborhood as well, and many of our friends live in the Murano Grande, and many times you can be going by and you'll see a Cisco Systems truck parked either in the bike lane or in the middle of the street, actually. And it could be for any number of restaurants in the area. I just want to make sure that when we approve this, that this won't happen in the future.
It says deliveries may only occur at 9 a.m. to 4 or as specified in the city and approved loading zones in the vicinity. Deliveries may only occur through the existing building service area and designated loading zones in the vicinity.
But there are none in the vicinity.
We can strike the loading zone part.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Elizabeth, Melissa, all good? Okay, someone want to move it?
Motion to approve.
Second. With that striking.
Yeah.
Okay,
would that strike? Jonathan seconded.
Quick second thought like that.
Okay, so the timely. I'm sorry, who made the motion?
Yechiel.
Okay, the motion.
And I used to say Yechiel. So. You're getting good.
Okay, roll call. Ms. Beattie?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Goltanoff?
Yes.
Ms. Latone?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right, I lied. We're going to do one more for lunch.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Planning Board File 230632, 3921 to 3925 Collins Avenue, the Cadillac Hotel.
This application is requesting a modification to the previously approved conditional use permit for a neighborhood impact establishment. Specifically, the applicant is requesting to change the name of owner and operator. They are not requesting any changes to the operations or the CUP, just this.
Okay. And staff recommends that the planning board approve the modification.
Oh, it's just chain of owner?
Just a chain of owner.
Yes, sir. I didn't know they sold. When would that happen?
It was not actually a sale of the property. It was an upper tier corporate transaction, so the actual property owner didn't even change in this case.
Yeah, it's a REIT, right? It's a REIT that owns a real estate investment trust. I thought, because I know the people pretty well.
Yes, so it's Hersha Hospitality,
right?
And there was an upper tier change in the structure, not the actual ownership entity. And because the order indicates that there's a requirement to update the CUP with a change in ownership, that's why we made this application, even though there's no change in the operation, no change in the hotel, not even a change in the actual LLC property owner, but there was a change in the ownership structure. And also, we determined that the restaurant tenant's ownership structure had some minor changes, so we just cleaned that up and updated that as well. But this is essentially just to document a corporate transaction at the upper levels of the corporate ownership.
Okay.
And there are no changes. As you can tell, the property is located in an area that's fairly low impact, and it's a traditional hotel with a traditional restaurant in the hotel to service the guests, and we've never had any problems with the venue since we got the CUP. Never been back to the board for any problems. So,
okay,
we're just asking for approval of the ownership change.
Good thing you did one more.
Huh?
Good thing you did.
Anybody
one more.
Here to speak on this in chambers? Anyone on Zoom?
No one on Zoom.
Didn't think there would be. Okay.
Just one thing, Mr. Chair. We did include in the draft order how we've been doing as time progresses as we get these applications, that every time there's an ownership change in the future, that they would submit an affidavit accepting the conditions, and then they would schedule a progress report to come before the planning board, just to make it a little easier because it's cumbersome when these sales happen.
So you want them to come next month?
No. Once they submit their affidavit, yes. In this case, no, because we have the new ownership. But in the future, if they were to sell again, the way it would
Got
work
it.
Is
They'd
they would submit
to.
An affidavit
Got
and
it.
Then schedule a progress report.
Okay.
Because right now, for the sale, we're making them pay a lot of application fees and do all sorts of things just for a simple
no problem.
Change.
Yeah, Scott?
That was my question, because you're changing the language in the CUP.
Yeah.
So if there's a new application that came in front of us, would you include this particular language saying that if there's a change in ownership that the affidavit would suffice?
Yeah, the affidavit and then subsequent a progress report
progress
after
report.
The affidavit so that they come before the board. And
one other question which kind of, you know, follows. I'm trying to imagine a situation like this, but I can't. But the issue I'm thinking of is there's a problem, an applicant, you know, a site that's a problem, and they sell, and maybe the new owner is it's known that it's not going to improve, and you know, if that happens, then with this new language, it wouldn't come back to us. In other words, which would sort of take away a little bit of our oversight, especially if there's a problematic, you know, application, whatever it may be. I'm just wondering, do you understand what I'm saying, and do you see how, is there anything we can do?
We've thought about that, and the issue is there's we need to have criteria to on which to deny an application. I can't see a name change application being denied for any conditional use for lack of compliance with the conditional use criteria. Okay. You can't really make a decision that this person has issues in the past. What would happen in this case, you'd have the progress report. You can make your concerns known as part of the progress report. We'll keep an eye out if there's any violations or anything. We'll
It was just something that popped into my head when I read that.
Okay. And also the conditions of your orders run with the land. So any operational conditions that apply to one property apply to a successor owner.
All right. Someone want to move it?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I just have one question. So it looks like it's been about 6.5 years since the original CUP was issued. And I want to ask, as part of any sort of progress report, whether it's given to staff or to us, that an updated copy of the TDM strategies be included and any sort of relevant information related to that.
Understood.
Thank you.
All right. Motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay. I'll second.
Motion by Ms. Beattie, second by Ms. Latone. Roll call, Ms. Beattie?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Goltanoff?
Yes.
Ms. Latone?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. We're going to take a 30-minute break, and then we'll get to code amendments.
3, 2, 1.
Okay. Welcome back, everybody. We're continuing the February 27, 2024 Planning Board meeting. The next item, the last two items are both comprehensive plan and code amendments. The first is filed Planning Board 230646, Watercraft Rental and Hotel Requirements.
Okay, so this is an amendment to the Land Development Regulations. It affects the WD1 district. In the staff report, on page 5 of the staff report, page 163 of the packets, you'll see a map that identifies where the WD1 district is located. It's basically a thin strip of land west of Collins Avenue that fronts the Indian Creek Waterway. And most of these lots are associated with the property on the east side of Collins Avenue, and it's intended to provide a waterfront amenity on the Indian Creek for those properties. So generally you see marinas, you see other water-related uses on these sites. Currently, the code provides that hotel units with a minimum of 350 units are allowed to have watercraft rentals. It also allows that use along Lake Pancoast, which is on the southern portion of the WD1 district. It's an area where the Indian Creek Waterway widens out, and so in that area, you're also allowed to have watercraft rentals. What this ordinance would do is it would prohibit watercraft rentals moving forward, regardless if it's a hotel, regardless of if it's on Lake Pancoast, you would not be allowed to have any new watercraft rentals on these sites. However, there are a few that are currently already in existence that are already grandfathered in, and so they would be allowed to exist. However, for those uses, the proposed ordinance creates some criteria that any of the legally nonconforming watercraft rental sites must abide by. So the first is that for those that are related to a hotel, that they are only allowed to rent to hotel guests, so they're not going to be allowed to rent to the general public. It requires that any legally permitted structures meet all applicable building, fire, and property maintenance standards. So if there's any that are in bad shape, they're going to have to bring those up to code. And then it provides that any legally established concessions in the Lake Pancoast area, that they not be allowed to expand. So they're allowed to keep what they have. They're not going to be able to expand. So that's what the ordinance does. There has been issues with watercraft rentals in this area. People are renting the boats. They have parties. They make noise. They're looking at the large houses along the Indian Creek Waterway, and it's affecting the quality of life in that area. So with that, staff recommends that the Planning Board transmit the proposed ordinance to the City Commission with a favorable recommendation, and I'm available if you have any questions.
Yeah, I have a couple preliminary questions. So if this is passed, it'll deem everything that's existing grandfathered but nonconforming. So if they stopped operating for 6 months, then no one else could come in.
That's correct.
Okay, that's first. Secondly, how many
will be nonconforming. How many?
As I understand it, there are three hotels that could have I believe Fountain Blue and Eden Rock do have it. I'm not sure if the Miami Beach Resort and Spa has one. That's the old Doral Hotel.
Right.
So at least two, potentially three, and then in Lake Pancoast, I want to say there's two or three concessions along.
And these
Lake
are boat rentals, not just jet skis. These are actual
jet ski rentals both. Already prohibited. So these are boat rentals.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Is anybody here to speak on this item? Anybody on Zoom?
I do not see any hands raised on Zoom.
Okay. Scott, any questions? Or?
No.
Seems pretty reasonable to me. Anybody?
I have questions.
Okay.
As someone who lived in a building that was fronting this waterway, thank you for doing this, because there's nothing like trying to, you know, having kids that are sleeping at 2 o'clock in the morning, and these charter operations are going on with, you know, music at all nights, at all hours of the evening. You call code compliance, they shut it off, they turn the music back on. So trying to rein this party in is very much appreciated. My question is, does this do enough to kind of stop the behavior? Because right now the non-conforming uses can continue to operate. So what does this do, I guess?
Well, you mentioned that you had added some restrictions on the non-conforming use. Can you say what they are?
The additional restriction primarily that the ones that are hotels are going to have to abide by is that they can only rent to hotel guests. They're not going to be open to the public. So there will be a little
That's
bit more control
deal.
There.
Yeah.
And then just that they need to bring all of their buildings that are on the site up to code.
Okay, got it. So all of the unauthorized parking that happens on that swale, all of the blocking of that lane, all of that hopefully is mitigated with this?
Correct. And just to be clear, the parking is already not allowed on that swale. So
but it happens all the time.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Yeah. That should be mitigated because it would be hotel guests, so they should not be coming in a private vehicle. If they're parked, they're going to be parked at the hotel, not at this site. So that definitely should be alleviated by this ordinance. And I believe there is a separate item pending before the Land Use Committee that will look at amortization and potentially over time getting rid of the legally nonconforming uses.
Got it. Okay. So
if that moves forward, that might come back before the Planning Board.
Okay. And then one more question. So another thing that I saw was you have these charter boats, and I understand that only charter boats and no jet skis, but a lot of these boats have jet skis off the back of them, and you'll see the boat is docked there, and then people are just taking the jet skis out. So is there any way to kind of close that loophole that you could think of, or?
That's a good question. I suppose we could amend it to incorporate that the watercraft shall not have any accessory jet ski or any other. I'd have to wordsmith it a little bit, but
I guess the good operators, I guess maybe should have that because they're going out into the ocean and they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we could. I guess I don't know the best way to do it to be fair to the good
operators. Unfortunately, what you do to one, you pretty much have to do to all of them. I can't see a way where we could allow only some to have it and not others.
Maybe at the commission they could think about that. I don't know.
And I will say under the current code is because jet ski rentals are prohibited, even if they were occurring off of a larger vessel, I think that would still be prohibited if it were at one of these properties.
Got it. Okay. So it becomes more of a code compliance thing. So they just have to be more aware of
and enforcement.
I'm just curious. Are there any statistics of what percentage of people that rent these boats are hotel guests as opposed to people coming in from the public wherever they are?
I have not seen that.
I don't know.
I bet it's a pretty significant number.
Yeah.
Okay. It seems like a good ordinance to me. Anybody have any other questions or comments?
Oh, we do have one hand raised on Zoom now. I don't know if you want to take it.
And I'm assuming that the nonconforming users, if it becomes, they had notice of this hearing?
Yes, we did a mail notice because it was less than 10 acres and it affects uses. So we notified everybody within 375 feet of the WD1 district.
I'm just amazed no one is here to speak about it. But anyway, go ahead on the Zoom call.
Frank.
Frank, please state your full name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Hi. My name is Garrett. I'm using my husband's Zoom account. I'm sorry about that. I was there earlier in the room, and I've been sworn in. Um, I I own a boat rental company, and I wanted to stand before you guys to tell you that I understand, and we all understand, that it has been some excess and some things that are not that should not be happening. But also there are a lot of good companies that want to be compliant and that should give in the opportunity to apply and get, you know, a proper license and everything. And so, you know, so the city can issue some type of permits for them that they're like, you know, that I don't know how to explain that, but regulatory charges and, you know, we want to invest to achieve compliance, and we should be allowed to basically continue to contribute to the local economy and create jobs for residents. And it's not only like the boat rentals that are going out at 2 a.m. Obviously, this needs to be shut down. It should have a curfew, something that says no more charters after 6 p.m. or no more charters after 5 p.m. Obviously, hotel guests are not a huge part of the boat rental clients that we get on there. It's probably less than 10%. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say. If maybe there is a commission that could work on getting solutions to balance the needs of the community and to help the compliant businesses and the ones that wants to be absolutely compliant and that are willing to invest on it to become compliant. Thank you for your attention. I'm sorry it was a little out of the place.
Thank you. Are there time constraints in here, Rogelio?
No, the ordinance does not have any times.
So you can charter a boat at midnight?
The way I read it, yes.
You're here to speak on this? Come on up.
Good morning.
Introduce yourself, your name and your address, if you don't
Anthony
mind.
Marzilli, 2421. I've been running.
That's right.
Lake Pancoast Drive, Miami Beach. And I'm a very experienced person in this matter. Been in the boat rental business since 1994. Initially started in front of the Eden Rock. I recently sold my business. One of the reasons is that the city has been giving BTRs to individual people that have a boat that make arrangements with an upland dock to pick up people. Since 2021, it's been overwhelming. And I'm sorry, I need to calm down a little bit because I've been running. I've been listening and waiting. So, there are technically three places along Indian Creek that should be allowed to have a boat rental. The boats that are docked from 41st Street to the Fontainebleau are technically skirting a law and a permit that was given to the boat show way back when. Boat show has a temporary permit by DERM to allow their boats to be parked there for the 2 weeks in February. Some people have been able to dock there and they have been cited, but that's another big problem. As far as answering some questions, you can charter a boat anytime you want. You can charter at 11 o'clock at night if you want. There are no time restrictions for that. We've done our part in my 30 years, except for New Year's, 4th of July, we have our boats back by 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. That's it. So,
but I'm confused. Did you sell your business? Are you still in the business?
I just sold it.
So you're out of the business now?
Yeah, I just sold it in December.
Okay. But you're just wanted to come on behalf of the people that bought
your business? You know, I should have been here a few years ago, but in the last few years, personally, I've been dealing with elderly illness, death, significant other with a major health issue. It's been, you know, I have a 10-year-old. I just haven't had time to handle city stuff.
Right, but your property, your business was sold. I'm assuming it's one of the non-conforming operators.
It's actually a conforming operator.
It is now, but if this ordinance
passes, it's always been. It's been for decades.
No, I get that, but if this ordinance passes, they will continue to operate, but they will be non-conforming at that point.
Correct.
Okay.
What I'm here to emphasize is something has to be done with the vast amount of boat rental companies that are calling themselves a company for one boat. They don't even tie up there. In some cases, they tie up in front of private condominiums, and then they pay to go to a place where they make a deal to pick people up. And that is the majority of the traffic on Indian Creek. So it needs to be started in the BTR end.
So your big concern is illegal operators.
Illegal operators, right. Correct. Okay. Which hopefully this will eradicate, especially the fact that
the ordinance says that
the hotels, Eden Rock, Fontainebleau, can only rent to their guests. That is going to take 70% of the business away from there, my estimation. So.
Right. Okay. Thanks. Just so you understand, what we here at the planning board do is we make a recommendation, and then the commission will ultimately decide. So you'll want to keep post of when that hearing is, and you know. But I appreciate.
I'm glad I made it back, and I'm glad you were able to hear me, and thank you for hearing me.
Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
I wish you all the best.
All right. Anybody else?
No other hands are raised on Zoom.
Okay.
How is personal watercraft defined? It says including but not limited to jet skis, but is that, I guess, is it defined somewhere?
I do not believe the code has a specific definition, but generally we view it as a boat that one or two people can sit on and operate, and that's it. Jet skis, Sea-Doo, that type of.
Does this push the problem elsewhere? These operators go, where will they go from there?
I suppose they could apply to go to a residential marina, but that's one of the discussion items we have before us is how to regulate that.
Okay. Motion.
My neighbors.
Yeah, I mean.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
No. I was just going to say that our neighbors in Allison and LaGorse have a huge, huge problem, as does the entire Indian Creek waterway. And coming around at night in the bay, it's a real problem. I think this is good.
Yeah. The only thing, I mean, I don't know what the ultimate goal is. It sounds like if you limit it to hotel guests, they may not survive. So that's going to be a consequence. But, you know. It definitely needs something, and this is a good start, I think. So,
my thing, I just don't want to. If there are good operators, and I guess we heard from one, but I don't think that they should be punished. I get it addressing that if there's a jet ski problem, that's one thing. But in terms of taking away the ability to own a lawful, you know, boat rental place that somebody's been there for years. They're a good actor. They're, you know, good patron. Maybe they would like this. I don't know. I just want to make sure that we're not punishing good operators. But, I mean, it's ultimately up to the commission, I think.
What about they can go – I mean, if you're a good operator, I mean, and we've already heard that you've got quite a percentage of bad operators, wouldn't the good ones go to a different location?
Not necessarily. There's only a finite number of locations to run a business on the water at Miami Beach. But so what you're saying is that the good operators would be able to stay
and operate out of a different
location.
Continue
operating. And then if they close for more than 6 months, then they would lose their ability to.
Right. But the significant restriction is only hotel guests using them.
And, that to and, me he, is, and he said
that,
it wasn't
that to
really,
me, I mean, that shuts down the good operators.
I agree. So all I'm saying is the commission will have to determine whether if the, you know, that that could be a consequence of the ordinance is that it'll, they'll all shut down because they can't make it.
And the good, these, I
but
mean,
the bad operators are the ones that are operating, the majority of them are the ones that are operating on Indian Creek.
Well, to me, that
Creek
isn't, and, if they're illegal, why, isn't that an enforcement issue?
They
like,
don't,
why are,
that's
what it seems like, it's an it, enforcement
but,
issue.
But same the Coast Guard and the Marine Patrol patrolled all of that, and we don't have that ability to enforce right now.
Well, and if I could just weigh in, this is part of a much bigger issue, yeah. Right? This is an amendment to the land development regulations to address a specific use in a specific district. So I mean, you can make separate recommendations on some of the things you've discussed, but for you know, in order to prohibit any new watercraft rental establishments in the WD1 district, and also kind of explain what the existing regulations mean, which is what this ordinance does, right. What it means to be associated with a hotel, meaning that the watercraft rental can only occur to a hotel guest. This amendment would be necessary.
Right. All I'm saying is that, and I agree with you, all my point is if the problem right now is we have all these illegal operators, what's this going to change unless there's enforcement? That's all I'm saying. I mean, you can pass this all day long, but if they continue to operate, nobody's enforcing the rules or the laws, then it's not going to change anything. So I think clearly enforcement's got to become a focus.
Well, this arguably could give, I guess, our code enforcement, you know, their own regulations to enforce as opposed to, you know, fish and wildlife regulations or state regulations. So this would give the city of Miami Beach officials the ability to enforce certain things.
Right.
And so is it, in addition to the hotel guest requirement, is it also automatically taking away, even if you're grandfathered in, you can't have jet skis in that canal?
Well, or, that was already prohibited.
That was already prohibited.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's nothing new that's in here.
Right.
Okay, good. And then would, I guess, one suggestion, because I personally, like, I mean, I do understand it being a problem, but if it's associated with a hotel who will ultimately take responsibility, so I imagine they would have more safeguards on it, perhaps opening it up, clarifying that hotel guests can be maybe any of the hotels or certain hotels that have these businesses, or I don't know. I'm just trying to broaden it so it's not like, you know, people from, you know, renting Airbnbs. Renting these boats, maybe instead of, you know, because like one of these hotels only has, you know, 400 guests at a time. All those people aren't going to be renting boats. I mean, maybe one per weekend, a couple per weekend. But if you get, you know, can combine some of these bigger hotels and they can have like a joint operation or something, it gives a little bit more of a clientele base. Because the other thing is, we do want to offer services to hotel guests. We do want to offer the ability to go on a boat to hotel guests. It's a nice thing about our city. But I guess I'm just trying to be a little bit more lenient to when we do have a hotel running an operation here, their clientele base isn't limited just to their hotel guests, but maybe they're the adjoining hotel is guests also. Does that make sense?
Do we know if the Fountain Blue or Eden Rock or any of them have their own charter services, or are these just...
I can answer those questions.
Yes, sir.
First, let me address what you just said and what has been said. The enforcement issue is the problem. It's not being enforced. Rarely is it being enforced. The people that are operating these rentals are so arrogant that they actually go onto city seawall property. Example, the seawall between 44th and 43rd, the seawall between across from the parking lot north of the Eden Rock, they just go up there and they pick people up and drop people off. Something happens there without proper insurance and blah, blah, blah. City is done. Not done, but financially on the hook. Okay? That answers that question. So the enforcement issue is the issue. As far as the licensed people, there has been a licensed boat company at Fontainebleau since just after I started, back from 98, Real Deal Yachts. They do sales and charters, been there for a long time. deal only in big boats. At the Eden Rock doesn't have a specific one boat rental company. There's a place that people come in, pay the guy, pick people up, drop people off. And of those people, there are a couple of very bona fide people, like the people in Bayside that have the big Biscayne Lady. You know, they come here, pick people up, take people out, and then drop people off. I mean, bona fide. They're not, you know, people that we should penalize at all. The people that need to be penalized are the people that are just taking advantage of the situation big time. So that's...
I mean, it's a tough question. How do you... I mean, you have to have a Coast Guard sitting there on the seawalls, like, waiting for illegal operator. I mean, it's a really...
That is the only way to do it. And then if you're going to be saying that hotel guests only, well, how are you going to prove that the guest is from the hotel? I mean, they have to bring their key card or something like that.
Well, again,
that enforcement issue is going to be the big issue. But at least moving forward, at least something is being recognized and being done. I can tell you this. Until 2020, there was no issue. I've been on this canal since 1994. There was no issue until 2020. After 2020, 21, the world came here. Every person that had a boat from Pompano or Daytona would be coming here, getting a license, and doing business.
Got it. Okay.
At least 100, at least.
David, you didn't want to say anything? You didn't want to speak on that?
No, he's not supposed to.
All right.
Well, do you want to move it with favor? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm in favor of this. I just think I would like to make the recommendation to the commission to consider not limiting it to hotel guests. It sounds to me like the operators who are associated with hotels are the bona fide good operators, and we shouldn't be punishing people who, you know, people who've been doing business with the city for 20 years in good faith. We shouldn't really be punishing them, and it's mainly the stragglers who are tying up illegally and coming, you know, operating illegal charters off of the seawalls or the temporary boat show permit. It sounds like that's the problem, and maybe we should consider directing the city to explore signage issues. You know, not only telling boats that they can't tie up there, but telling patrons, you know, like if you are boarding a charter boat at this location, you are breaking the law, like, and, you know, scaring them a little bit so that they're going to think twice about using this charter company. But I do want to dissuade, you know, illegal charters and boat rentals from operating in our city.
Right.
What if we had something that said, not to get too much in the weeds, but to recommend also that it's only licensed to hotels, and if those ownership changes, then if this hotel decides to sell it or something like that, then, I mean, you get a different boat, but it needs to be only licensed to the hotel.
I just think there's a certain safeguard when the hotel is running the business, or at least contracting with the business, because it's, you know, their liability insurance gets tied into it. So I just don't want to punish those. I mean, you're shutting down the services to these hotel guests, that these hotel guests have enjoyed this for 20 years, but it's not, you know, when it's not just, you know, it's confusing with hotel guests. That's all I'll say.
All right, so normal procedure, let's do this. So as we always do, let's make a motion on the ordinance itself, and then we'll make another motion on a suggestion of things that the commission should consider.
If I may, I'd like to make two motions, the first one specific to this. So
okay.
I'd like to make a motion that we transmit the proposed ordinance with a favorable recommendation. That's motion one.
Okay.
Motion two.
Before you get to motion two, we need a second.
Well,
on
I just
that.
I want to give context
All right.
for the first one.
Okay.
Hopefully
All right.
that gives people some more comfort. Motion number two would be that the city commission think about ways to either accommodate or license reputable or good operators, while also ensuring increased or enhanced enforcement, whether that's, you know, maybe it doesn't just have to be a hotel guest, but everyone has to come through a hotel, right?
They would have to require insurance, right?
Well, that should be a kind of this.
Okay.
Yeah. To me, enforcement's the key.
It seems like there's a major enforcement issue. So hopefully kind of with those two things, the commission can solve
it. I think they're both well taken. So on the first motion to send with a favorable recommendation, I need a second on that.
I'll second it.
Okay. Melissa seconded. Let's have a roll call. This is to pass it on with a favorable recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Second by Ms. Beattie. Okay. Roll call, Ms. Beattie?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Goltanoff?
Yes.
Ms. Lutone?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. Yahil, go ahead.
Can you clarify? Yeah, just
go ahead and rearticulate. Now, this is a motion that we request that the commission consider certain issues.
Correct. So I'd like to make a motion that the commission considers how to authorize reputable licensed operators to continue to operate in a lawful manner. That's A. And B, to ensure that enforcement is actually occurring to ensure that these issues are being monitored and kept in check. Because it seems like the biggest issue is, again, the lack of enforcement. Because a lot of these laws and ordinances have already been in place.
Can I offer a friendly amendment?
Sure.
We'll just have the commission consider ways to allow, just to consider whether the limiting it to hotel guests will overly restrict them so much that it will shut them down, and to consider ways of allowing these good operators connected with hotels ways of staying open, I guess.
They should be aware that that's a potential consequence of putting them out of business. So, right.
But my only question to that is, even, and I don't want anyone to ever go out of business, you know, just like this, but right. If a result of them not being good operators that they have to go out of business, I think that's what's required. And right now, on Indian Creek Waterway, there are people who have the signage. They're not just tying up a boat coming up. Those boats are there every day, all day, and they are horrible. So it's not like they're operating, you know, just like this in the darkness of the night.
I think which is why we're still connecting operators. It to the hotels.
I think
we're all in agreement that the hotels are sort of what keeps these companies in check, because they can cancel the contract if the company's making the hotel look bad. It's a matter of these good operators. If you're limiting it just to hotel guests, are you risking shutting them down?
Okay, so one quick thing. There's only this short little section here that's really resorts. It's the Eden Rock, Fountain Blue, the Miami Beach, right? Isn't the goal to have all of this? It is residential areas right now that's being disturbed, just like the racing cars and things like that. Shouldn't we just have or maybe they can... The commission can consider just having them confined to that one, the little hotels that are right here. I just feel like all of this, the Indian Creek Waterway Lake, all of this is being abused.
Well, the other problem is the charters will then go dock behind Sunset Island or North Bay Road, and they're blasting music. So that's another whole other issue.
But, well, I mean, over the city. So, well, I mean, but we're addressing this right now.
I'm just saying part of the neighborhood issue is how they behave once they're out in the charter. But, David, you want to say something?
Yeah. This is obviously a small piece to a much greater problem that we're trying to solve. Like what Nick said earlier, there is a passed on first reading. On second reading, there is going to be an item put forward to end all commercial activity on the Indian Creek Waterway. And we're going to go through an amortization schedule, hopefully. I can speak as a resident and someone who's campaigned on thousands of doors that the quality of life on our residential waterways has deteriorated. And unfortunately, when you crack the door open, you invite a much larger problem. I don't believe the Indian Creek Waterway was ever meant to really be a commercial activity zone. There is no marina. there is no dock master, there are no bathrooms, there are no showers, there is no infrastructure that would accommodate any real marina along the Indian Creek waterway. And so, you know, if I would think twice about sending a recommendation to existing operators, because we already have in motion to completely shut down the operations in Indian Creek waterway. So that's all I have to say. And welcome to take any questions if you have.
Question for you, because you're probably very familiar with the answer. So any commercial operators that are on Indian Creek waterway right now, they could relocate to those marinas. I guess, where would they relocate to?
Yeah, they could move their operations to another marina.
Meaning, but in the
Miami Beach
Miami
marina.
Beach, Miami Beach marina,
for example.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Or out of Miami.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, so we're – go ahead, Alyssa.
No, I was going to say, I think we got to kind of tackle the issue here, and we're looking at the Indian right. Creek neighborhood, and right. I think we tackle that issue, and we allow business to evolve in the way it needs to at this point, where the operators will have to find other places to operate.
I mean, your microphone's not on.
Oh, sorry. It's on. It is
oh,
on.
Sorry.
So I just think we need to tackle this first problem and just make sure that we just allow the natural course of these businesses finding other marinas to run their businesses.
I agree. And with that second piece of data, kind of with the larger picture,
mm-hmm.
I pull the second motion.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing I would say is the motion should be that this commission and the city need to focus on enforcement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because...
That,
if there's no enforcement, they're going to continue to have bad
waste
actors.
Waste of time, right?
One last thing. Last comment.
One last comment.
Sure.
When I started in this business in 1994, they allowed one license for boat rental at the Eden Rock, one at the Fontainebleau, and one at the business that I just sold, and one at the Doral. That was it. They are giving BTRs to multiple entities. That is a huge issue.
Okay. We hear you. Thank you. All right. So since the second motion was rescinded, we already passed the first one, right? All right. That's it then.
All
right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. All right. The last item is Planning Board File PB20. Well, actually, no, we have discussion items. Action items, Planning Board File 240652, height regulations in the CCC district.
Okay. So... this is essentially a follow-up ordinance to another ordinance that was recently considered by the Planning Board. You may recall October 24th, 2023, the Planning Board, the old member, the new members may not, the existing members may. The ordinance affected the South Beach Development Regulations as a result of the impacts to the city from the Live Local Act, which was approved by the Florida Legislature last year. That act provided that in mixed-use and commercial districts, a property that was building residential units where 40% of the units were for workforce housing, that they could avail themselves of the highest height limit within a mile. So as a result of that ordinance, as a result of that bill, the city passed an ordinance which reduced the height limits in all districts south of 23rd Street from whatever it was prior to 150 feet. Or if it was higher than 150 feet, reducing it to 150 feet. So there is no height limit south of 23rd Street higher than 150 feet. As part of that ordinance, we noticed that the Convention Center District was inadvertently left out. The Convention Center District allows for 300-foot-tall hotels. The Convention Center Hotel that was approved is below that. It's about 175 to 180 feet, but it's already approved. It has its ability to be constructed, so it's not affected by this. So this is essentially just correcting an error, correcting an oversight to reduce the height limit in the Convention Center District to 150 feet.
Well, let me ask someone, the Live Live Local Act, isn't it whatever building height is within a mile of governs, regardless of the Sydney ordinances?
The way it's currently drafted, it's the highest... zoned height within a mile.
Zoned, not actual height
Correct.
Of a building?
Zoned.
Yeah.
Oh, so if you change the zoning, that will control?
Correct.
Even if there's a building higher than that?
Correct. As it's currently drafted, the legislature
in their infinite wisdom
may change that, right. But as it's currently drafted, okay. It's the zones.
So this does matter?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
The bill is currently being debated. It's probably being debated right now in Tallahassee, so that may change.
Okay. But, anyone here to speak on this? Anyone on Zoom?
I see no hands on Zoom.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Matthew?
I do have a question. This might be for Nick or Rogelio. Does the smart plan, I got to get the exact language here, the smart plan corridors in terms of the county's RTZ, RT zoning, rapid transit zoning, does that play in here? Because I know that the urban center kind of overlaps with the CCC area, which is predominantly, that area is predominantly government-owned.
Mm-hmm. So the way the RTZ ordinance is currently drafted, what cities have to do is ensure that they have an FAR that complies with the minimum standard that's prescribed by the RTZ ordinance. And currently, the city of Miami Beach complies with all of those requirements. We've received a notice from the county, essentially their equivalent of the planning director, saying that we currently comply with the FARs. That may change depending on what the county commission does, if they amend the ordinance. But currently, it looks like we comply. And that ordinance does not affect height. It just affects FAR. And it looks like we comply. We're kind of like what they want to achieve with our urban walkable form in South Beach. Now, the county RTZ ordinance does apply to county-owned land. I believe there are two county-owned sites. But the height limits for those sites, the last time I looked at it was 85 feet, so that would not really have an impact on the Live Local Act.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Someone want to move it favorably? Elizabeth?
I will.
Okay.
I'll move the ordinance.
Favorably.
Favorably.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay.
Okay. Roll call, Ms. Beattie?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Gultanoff?
Yes.
Ms. Latone?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right, Rogelio, do you see anybody that's from the city to speak on the residential marina uses?
I do not see. Ms. Litos is not online. She's not in the audience. So I think maybe we can continue the discussion item unless the board would like to discuss.
Is that normal for her not to show up or tell you what's
going on? I understood that she would be here as of last week. She did say that she may have some issues, but I understood she would be here.
Okay. How's our agenda for
maybe,
next month?
So maybe something came up and she couldn't.
How's the agenda for next month?
I don't think it's very heavy. We have one or two ordinances and, two or three private applications?
All right.
Shouldn't be too heavy.
So we'll move that to next month? Do we need a motion on that, or can we just
We can continue.
Okay. All right.
One question, before we go to consent agendas. When are we going to discuss the kind of workforce housing office, the whole conversation we had from last meeting?
The office discussion is scheduled. The board scheduled it for March.
Got it. Okay, so in March. And
it'll be
we'll also be
March.
Able to present on workforce housing and things like that, correct?
The discussion item, though, it was on the office incentives. So
the office incentives, the impact to traffic, kind of looking at things holistically as a whole city.
Mm-hmm.
So that's March, right?
That was for the office incentives. For workforce housing, I don't recall there being another.
We had previously discussed workforce housing. I just don't know where that settled.
The board made several recommendations, and those were transmitted to the city commission as an LTC.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, we did have an ordinance in progress on workforce housing incentives. I believe the commissioner that was sponsoring that item is no longer he left. And I'm not sure that the ordinance was picked up by a new commissioner, so I don't know that I don't know its status right now.
Got it. So how do we pick that back up?
If you'd like, we can schedule another discussion item on workforce housing.
Can you just forward me the LTC?
Sure.
And I'll
take it. Okay, we can bring it up next month if you'd like.
Thank you.
To proceed with that.
Real quick, can you just give us what's the status of the whole Clevelander Live Live Local? What any new developments on that, Nick?
Not that I am aware of. The commission did make a referral to the Land Use Committee at its last meeting to consider a settlement proposal by the Clevelander. We have no litigation with the Clevelander over the Live Local Act, but I don't have any information about that. So
and nothing's changed in Tallahassee? Because I know you got a bunch of lobbyists
there. Is a
there.
Bill moving pretty quickly in Tallahassee that would amend the Live Local Act, keeping intact right now the one-mile radius for maximum height, but preempting us significantly as to FAR. So,
so further restricting the city's power?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Has the city issued a moratorium like some of the other municipalities on?
You may remember we addressed that a few months ago. You're cannot issue a moratorium, but the administrative review procedure that you all recommended in favor of that, the city commission adopted that. And then the height reductions, the city commission approved at first reading. And or was it second reading?
I think it's scheduled for second reading.
It's scheduled for second reading.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nick, could you just explain why the city, because I know some other municipalities have, why we couldn't institute a moratorium on new building permits?
Well, the general rule on moratorium, first of all, moratoria on development applications are universally going to be subject to challenge. So the law on that is that you can have a moratorium, you can impose a moratorium by ordinance, but it must be temporary in nature. It's a significant deprivation of the rights of a property owner. So it must be temporary in nature, and the purpose of that moratorium must be to accomplish, a specific planning goal. Like, for instance, if we had a few years ago a moratorium on building permits in North Beach, while the city took a comprehensive look at designating historic districts and adopting. What were the guidelines for the design guidelines for
the
conservation districts outside of the historic districts? And so that moratorium was limited in duration, intended to allow the city to preserve the status quo while we took a broader look at a particular area and adopt new regulations. The Live Local Act is framed as, first of all, it's a preemptive law, so it restricts our ability to do certain things, and as to projects that qualify for the Live Local Act, we are required to approve them. So we would have no basis whatsoever to, and I mean I never use language that strong, but we would have no basis whatsoever to impose a moratorium.
Is there a proposed settlement with the Clevelander?
So I don't have any information about that.
Okay.
But they are apparently going to be submitting something in advance of a future land use committee meeting.
Right. Okay. No, because the rumor on the street was that they really want their 5 a.m. license, and that if they got that, they'd go away. But that's just rumor. So I was curious if they had put something on the table. But anyway, okay. So the last discussion item then is establishing consent agendas. I don't remember who suggested we put that on, or is that
this staff? This is staff. We added this item. This came about as a result of a recommendation from Barry Dunn, who was a consultant that the city hired to look at how we could streamline our permitting processes. And one of the recommendations that they had was that a consent agenda can also be added to land use board meetings for routine, simple application approvals. So we wanted to bring this up to the board to get your thoughts on this. The idea would be similar to what the City Commission does on non-controversial items. The City Commission has a consent agenda that has 20 different items, 20 or 30 different items. The commission can then, each individual commissioners can then choose, oh, I want to discuss this particular item, and they'll pull it out of the consent agenda and they'll discuss it separately. And then,
so staff determines the consent items.
That's the idea here.
Right.
We haven't fully fleshed it out. We just wanted to get your feedback to even determine if it's something we should pursue. And so then the consent items can be pulled if you want more discussion on them, or otherwise the commission can vote on the remainder. The way we see it for a land use board, the way it could work, it would be very difficult, would be that if the applicant agrees to every single condition that that staff provides them, potentially they could be included on a consent agenda. The planning board could open up a public hearing for the consent agenda,
And then if anybody wants to speak on any particular item, it would be pulled out of the consent agenda. Additionally, if any planning board member wants to discuss an item in greater detail, it would be pulled out of the consent
agenda. And when would planning board receive the consent agenda?
It would be just part of the packet you would see on your agenda. Would be listed in order.
Right,
you'd still have.
So we get the report of what, a week before or a few days before,
right.
Someone would email you and say, I'd like this removed. Like if one of the planning board members wanted it off, they would write you.
Or you could do it at the hearing, and we would be prepared to discuss it at the hearing as well.
All right, how would that impact the public if it's on a consent agenda?
It should not. It would impact the public in that they wouldn't get the presentation at the hearing, but
also, our goal is to be transparent, and I feel like that limits the public's ability to get information. And I think that it goes against our Citizens' Bill of Rights as well as our residents' right to know. And I don't think I would vote for that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not voting. It's just a discussion item, but I agree with you.
It because it was a recommendation in that report, and we felt that it needed to be discussed because of that. But I agree the mechanics of it would be difficult. Our agendas are not long enough where that would really be a very useful tool.
I don't even think it's the length. I just don't think there's many items that really warrant consent before us. But
right.
Scott,
the only ones maybe
Matthew,
a lot split,
other?
But even there.
I agree. Our agendas are not like commission agendas, and I think Elizabeth made the best point that it's more of an opportunity for the public to take part in something in front of us. So,
agree.
I don't think it's needed.
Okay.
Anyone disagree? All right.
All right. Discussion concluded.
Okay. Well, congrats on getting through your first planning board meeting, except Scott's a veteran. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
And thank you for helping me.